All right, the disclaimer's up, and before we introduce or really start, I just want to point out that the disclaimer was something that asked us to put at the head of the film. Being the head of and this film was once a film, and wanted us to throw something up there to alleviate any of the, how shall we say, violent tendencies of some of the far religious right, or even the loony left. But I said I didn't want to do it because I felt a little chicken shit. And he said, well, you should put it up there, you know, so nobody gets hurt. And I said, well, why would anyone get hurt? And he said, because some people might take this movie seriously. And I said, when they get to the rubber poop monster, I don't know if anyone will really be taking the movie seriously anymore. But he asked me to put something up regardless, and so I said, well, can I write anything I want? And he said, yeah. So I wrote this platypus thing. That being said, hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Kevin Smith. I've written and directed a few flicks, this being the latest one of them, and this being our latest attempt to cash in on the lucrative aftermarket of video release and now, of course, DVD release, which I just want to go on the record as saying I really like DVD. I think it's a great format, contrary to comments I've made other places. I'll go around the room. To my far left, Uber producer Scott Mosier.
Hello.
Gentleman who's worked on everything I've ever done. To my immediate left, Vincent Pereira, a longtime friend who we consider to be the Viewaskew historian and a fellow who's a filmmaker in his own right as well.
Hello.
There's me. You all know me. And then there's a gentleman to my immediate right is a guy who some people have seen in such big pictures as the Mallrats, Chasing Amy, and space rock movies, and features about guys who...
Thanks for that wonderful introduction.
Ben Affleck, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi, how you doing?
Next to Ben, of course, Jason Mewes, smoking like a chimney, the man, the legend, the mustache. Look at it coming in, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Wrapped in his Echo sportswear, which I'm sure he'll be telling us about later on.
Yeah.
And a gentleman to his right, who we all know and love, Chasing Amy's Jason Lee.
Yep.
And Jason Lee, as you know, has been with us like Ben for a lot of movies now.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I think our mission this time we record is to make sure Lee says more than three things. if you've ever heard the Mallrats commentary, Lee pipes in with like, yeah, I like that scene too. and we're going to let him run the commentary this time. Okay, unlike Affleck, who usually pops in.
So we're already,
already
about 5 minutes into the film and haven't spoken about it yet.
Yeah, we haven't really. There's not much to say about the picture, really. I mean,
probably could have cut this whole beginning part out.
I think
it's interesting to point out that in that opening sequence, once all the violence is off camera, and yet you actually got some flack for the violence in this film.
We did. Vinny brings everything down to earth. More serious
right away, baby.
Which I believe on a DVD website they chastised you for.
On some news group, I'm too dry, apparently.
Yeah. We'll get to the news groups later on.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, we not even just in the press, everywhere we got chastised for the movie being so violent, ultra-violent. And it's weird because the violence is all cartoony. There's the Buddy Christ.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really something that I think was... It wasn't a flick that was nearly as violent as other flicks I've seen, but I guess they didn't think it should have been this violent coming from us, presumably.
Where is the Buddy Christ, and how many are there?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because the Buddy Christ is located at Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash, a comic book store in Red Bank, New Jersey, where if you're a fan of the films, even if you're not really a fan of the films,
Jesus,
you can pop on down and you can pick up a comic book, pick up a shirt with my face or Jay's face on it.
Yeah,
make a friend
Broad
or two.
Street,
make a friend or two.
35 Broad Street.
35 Broad Street.
732-758-0508.
That's the number you might want
to
call.
Phone number to get there.
So anyway, that's where it's housed right now, along with a lot of other memorabilia from our other pictures. So if you like Viewaskew, you'll love Jay and Silent Bob.
The movie's starting to get good.
There's that beauty shot, which forever you were always crying that you never got a reveal, and I revealed you in the movie.
It's operatic, visually speaking, that reveal.
And sitting next to Matt Damon is Betty Aberlin, who we might recognize from, what was it?
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Yeah.
who was genius. She was actually really great in the movie and very appreciative to be in the picture. I still get thank you notes from her.
Wow.
She was trying to distance herself from that whole 20 years of Mr. Rogers thing. I should point out that while we were shooting one of your takes, you had a friend sitting next to you who was not in the picture, but was in spirit, I guess. You don't even remember.
You're losing me.
Gwyneth Paltrow was sitting next to you while
she,
we were shooting
that
sequence.
Gwyneth Paltrow was...
You were trying to get her some work, put her in this picture.
Trying to get her career utilized.
Yeah, doesn't she? Her roles don't really pan out for her. But I refused.
That's right.
I got an eye for talent.
No, you know what to shoot.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's right. Gwyneth was there.
There's a fellow who's not here today because he's in Europe or probably just doesn't want to be involved with this and is trying to distance himself as much
trying
as
to
possible.
Get his, he's got a real career. He's trying to put together. He doesn't want to be brought down.
The talented Mr. Ripley himself, gay killer Matt Damon, couldn't be here today, but I'm sure would
he's here in spirit, passed on his regards, and says the movie's decent.
Also should point out, technically, this is the first film you shot in scope.
This is, and I got chastised for that by Variety critic Todd McCarthy. Basically, I want to use the next 2 hours to blast everybody who's ever said anything bad about me. Todd McCarthy, the buffoon who reviews for Variety, I'm sure you want to leave yourself out of these comments as you get reviewed by the guy often and regularly, said that it was a silly use of, I'm paraphrasing, silly use of widescreen. He said we didn't need it at all. Why would you shoot such garbage in widescreen? Something to that effect. And suggested we cut 45 minutes from the movie.
On the other hand,
my mother said the same exact
thing. Yeah, well, on the other hand, Andrew Saras recently called you the next Scorsese, and he actually went on record as saying that your use of visuals in Chasing Amy was just fine, and that reviewers who pick on it wouldn't recognize good visuals in any other film, but they just pick on it with you just because it's become sort of in fashion to pick on you.
Because they're racist.
Yeah, exactly.
I always figured.
It's because you're part German, right?
I know, and I've never played the race card, but
yeah.
I will in the future.
Yeah.
We should also point out that he wasn't that big a fan of this picture,
yeah.
though. He said really nice things about Jason.
Brian O'Halloran.
Mm.
Remember when that Lee piping up with his one comment, Brian O'Halloran backing away
well,
from the
we
mic.
We can't go by without
No, that's Brian O'Halloran. He's been everything we've ever done, played Dante and Clerks, and many other characters, Gil Hicks and Mallrats.
So this is Grant Hicks.
This is Grant Hicks this time around. Brian always plays a relative of himself.
And you notice that there's Betty in the background, a very funny little bit of business.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I never noticed that.
You never saw that bit of business? Because you're so busy concentrating.
I'm watching my own work.
Yes. This is actually really great. We did this in about, I don't know, about 26, 28 takes. It only took you. Strong performance.
That's what happens when you just kind of put the camera down and two actors walk into the frame. It's like, you know, some guys do coverage, and he was like, what's that mean?
I just want to point out, this will probably be the last commentary for a DVD we ever do.
With Ben Affleck?
Well, I'm trying to curry the sympathy vote, basically, essentially. So please enjoy this, because it'll never, ever happen again.
He'll eat those words.
Until the next movie. I thought this was a really great delivery. You did great. Damon was
Thank you.
Damon was Damon, but you shined right here. Listen to that. This thing has been sanctioned.
You know, find that Kevin Smith cadence. It's like Shakespeare. You find the rhythm.
Speaking of Shakespeare, there was a picture you were working on while we were working on this picture that I remember telling you, don't do it. It'll ruin your career. Just do this. Don't worry about that picture. And that movie was Shakespeare in Love, the movie that went on to make over $100 million and win an Academy Award.
Well, more than one Academy
another Award. Look, it's a friend of Kevin's with a cheese head out.
That's not a friend of
Kevin's
mine.
Kevin's third
an extra.
Cousin.
I wish it was a friend of mine. I remember you lobbied for that role yourself, and I was just like, you're in the scene already.
I just wanted to wear the hat.
I just wanted to be digitally
You just want as much
Talk
screen
about,
time
You just
as
got upstaged by the cheese heads.
Here we have a bunch of USQ employees in a row in the
One
background.
Time former employees. Yeah. There's Bill
Woods.
Reading a book in the background. He's gone. That is that. Look, if you look in the Wisconsin board, you can see the camera crew in the background. There's Quinn and Nick. They're gone, too, holding up what we hoped would be a line of movie dolls that we could have marketed, but the picture only did $30 million, so they kind of went away.
Well, that warranted a full-page ad in Variety.
It did. We did get a full-page ad in Variety congratulating us on making $30 million, which I hope doesn't become the norm anymore, because every movie in the world pretty much makes
and there's Kim.
$30 million. There's Kim, also late of USQ.
Well, Nice way to open the pick. I like that.
It's a long, long credits.
Long piece of film before the credits began.
Class.
Yeah, it's very classy, I thought. This church isn't in neither McHenry nor Illinois. It was actually in Pittsburgh, where most of the movie was shot. In fact, that Wisconsin sequence wasn't in Wisconsin at all. Really, it was in Pittsburgh, in the Pittsburgh airport.
Kevin's brother.
This is Dan Etheridge, a very good guy, who did a really great job. There's Vinny sleeping in the middle, see?
There's the historian.
That's Vincent.
Yeah. Very dry.
Taking notes. This is a dry performance.
Yeah,
it's
really
dry.
You
like to make
there.
Movies, but mostly you like to put your friends on camera. That's what I love.
Pretty much. That's what I
feel like. That's what
that
I owe my entire
explains your career,
to.
Yes.
See, I got it first.
I'm not really into the art of storytelling, the craft of filmmaking. I just like to put my
friends
on the big screen and see how people react to them.
Here's Linda Fiorentino's
This is our first look at Linda Fiorentino.
Lovely and warm Linda
Surely
Fiorentino.
Not our last, boy, there are lots of stories that I can and will tell as we move along in the production. Not the easiest person in the world to work with. I stand alone on those comments. I'm the only one who politically will make that move.
Quiet.
You hear
Deathly
those echoes?
Oh, here we have
Steve
the infamous
Dave.
Yeah.
Steve, Dave, and Walt, my friends Brian Johnson and Walter Flanagan back again.
Yeah, with Janine Garofalo.
With Janine Garofalo, who, after we shot this scene, I wished I'd cast her in the lead of the movie. She was real a joy to work with, a lot of fun, and I really dug her.
Making friends. Notice Muse is quiet. He's looking to get Fiorentino in his next picture.
Yeah.
He is. He's hoping to work on another Fiorentino picture very soon.
So where were you yesterday? A bunch of us went to brunch.
Not the prettiest set of the whole movie.
Not the prettiest what?
Set.
Oh, yeah.
Like
was this a real
the
location?
The look of the room.
This
is a real location.
Yeah.
But I remember when we were shooting, Ratface was a little disappointed that the room looked as plain as it did and tried to spiff it up while we were shooting. Ratface, who's our, what would you call
production
it? Production designer. Who does a genius job every other time. What is his job? I remember he wasn't happy with this, but he more than made up for it in every other scene in the movie.
She
was good. Couldn't you see her?
I never
Bethany
met her
now?
Actually until after the premiere party, and she was a really nice lady, really funny, really sweet.
Oh, Janine? Yeah.
She's talented, very.
Vinny drunkenly said things to her.
Love to her.
What did Vinny?
Chat,
you were there.
Street.
What was he saying to her? Vinny was maintaining, like, I kept you in the movie. Vinny was also editing with me and Scott.
How humiliating. She's like, the only reason I'm in the movie is because this drunk guy has a crush.
It also wasn't necessarily true. I don't think we were trying to hatch
joking.
It out of the movie.
No, not at all.
Vinny just lit to the gills. Vinny went up to Matt Damon as well. He was like, I kept you in the movie.
I didn't think Matt Damon was there.
No.
Here comes Jason Lee.
Matt came to the party, though.
Jason is a villain for
the first
time in his career.
First appearance of Chasing Amy's Jason Lee.
That's a nice visual shot. You know, what is this?
That's crap. It's very pedestrian.
Good afternoon from the EPA.
Love that click of the pen. I'm from the EPA.
And he calls her Mrs.
Reynolds. Vintage Lee head nod. Hello, I'm from the EPA.
I got it from Mallrats.
You got it from yourself in Mallrats?
Well, more of
copied
that,
yourself.
More of that awful violence.
Yeah, there's far too much violence in this picture, I guess.
Here's a nice little digital effect.
Ketchup on the back. Oh, look
at
that.
Is that our first digital effect?
Yeah.
This picture might as well be Star Wars.
Yeah. It was.
Was that Mrs. Reynolds' line in the script, or did Jason...
I think in rehearsals
that.
We actually put it in. Mrs. Reynolds.
Yeah,
because
you got to put the Reynolds.
That's a nice touch, attaching the ribbons to the vent so as to visually demonstrate the air flowing. Who says you're not a visual director?
Well, basically, you're taught in film school that the audience is full of idiots, and you have to reach the dumbest person.
Completely sacrificing
in the
realism for the sake of visual genius.
Exactly. Which I always felt was what you went for in your performance.
Hmm. In many ways.
The horns, I should point out, that effect was an afterthought. It wasn't planned.
Oh, yeah, when they grew.
Yeah, we
That's
did.
A nice
that
Brady Bunch on. Wipe thing, you know?
Yeah, that was that comic book wipe.
Again,
she
visual.
Did throughout the
film.
Well, I've seen a few of the Brady Bunch. There's a dissolve.
Yeah, I mean.
There's a chick praying. She's huge.
The kids love that.
Yeah. Kids really came out to support this movie.
it was like
Pokemon,
Snowden,
to be quite honest with you.
It'll be big on video. Just, the kids couldn't get in.
No, that's what I keep telling myself.
They kept buying tickets for
They
Pokemon.
Got into Deuce Bigelow somehow, but they certainly couldn't get into this picture.
That's another digital effect.
Yeah, this is the second digital effect of the movie.
You know what? Where's your digital effects Oscar nomination?
I didn't get anything.
Look, you can see some that. Underwear.
Oh yeah,
class. But that's again the kids like that.
Class, very.
Do the how many effect shots are in the movie?
There's like 15.
Three.
50?
15.
1-5.
Who did it?
Two companies. One was Station X and
Threshold.
Threshold did the other ones. They came in and
pinched
it.
Threshold did the horns.
Nice plug. And who did those effects? Alan Rickman popping up in the movie for the first time, certainly not the last. A phenomenal, phenomenal performer.
See, another nice camera move.
A push-in.
Yeah, see? A push-in.
This guy's dumb.
Nice in the commentary is just all like, there's a crane. Yeah. The camera's moving.
Basically, we're pretty much just defending the movie.
Really impressed with
I'm no Michael Bay, but I have a move or two of my own.
Yeah. I mean, you have a repertoire, my friend. Don't sell yourself short. And look at this.
Class.
Yeah. Wonderful.
No balls, no cock.
Look at that. Three-piece set.
Huge moment.
Curious bulge.
The Rickman is really fantastic in this scene.
He's awesome.
Alan is phenomenal as he is in everything.
Yeah.
And rose the credibility of this picture far beyond the level it deserved by being in it.
What was that? How did they do that?
As a prosthetic.
Just a basic plastic underwear.
You're curious, aren't you?
Trying to steer this towards something people might be interested in. I don't know.
Yeah, they put some latex on him and created basically a pair of shorts that went down to his knees that he just wore.
Fascinating.
Like a rubber panty.
Oh, look at the wings. Look at the wings.
Ooh.
Look at those wings.
Really fancy.
Those are really sweet. What are you cracking on those wings?
I'm serious.
Those are great wings.
Love the wings. I saw
the best wings I've ever seen in a movie.
They were by Vincent Guastini's crew, right?
Vincent Guastini, the guy who did that dickless effect.
All the practical effects.
As well as the no man, the Golgotham we'll see later on, the ship monster.
Really nice guys. They worked really hard, and they actually do Saturday Night Live.
They did a lot for very little. Their practical effects budget was extremely small. Those wings, each pair was built for about like just over $5,000, which is... Yeah. Peanuts.
And there's like seven of them right below frame down there pulling on wires and arguing and bickering
behind
with each other.
Wall.
It's a fake
wall. And they were behind
all the cables going under the
and
wall.
And I was actually back there pulling cable myself. I was giving directions. I have a puppeteering
credit. There's actually a fake cable.
Pulling cable.
I have a puppeteering credit in the movie I was very proud of.
You gave yourself a writing credit.
Were they heavy? Ben.
Yes.
Were they heavy?
They're very heavy, Jason. Thank you.
They weighed about 100 pounds.
They're cumbersome. Good
and,
introduction.
I got a sense that it wasn't my nor his favorite part of the movie.
They weighed about 100 pounds,
Alan
hurt his back really bad.
You didn't, because I remember when we were doing your set of the wings, you kept saying, take them off. And between takes, we had to take them off. Really set us back about three or four days on the schedule.
Funny, I don't
Alan
remember that.
Wore his wings all the way through and threw his back out and then was out.
That's
for about
what we like to call hogwash in the business. It's a tall tale to fit.
I remember I have pictures of you on your knees with those wings.
This here we have the interminable restaurant scene.
The interminable.
Where was this?
This was shot at a Mexican restaurant in Pittsburgh.
Again, using a location as opposed to a set.
Yeah, we very rarely do we actually build anything.
You built the train, which is later.
We built the train, which is the most expensive set ever built. Some pictures. This is a rather long scene, but I think interminable is a bit harsh.
5 minutes ago, kind of stuck in your craw.
It did. I'm still thinking about it. And things you said on the last commentary, as well as things you said when we first met. I'm holding them all against you, keeping you on my list. This guy I thought was really going to break out for this role as the silent waiter. But it didn't really pan out. I thought he was the next Ben Affleck.
Like so many of you askew alums.
Well, he had a start kind of like your start in Mallrats. It's kind of the date rapist, the guy who works in a fashionable metal store.
Yeah, I think I know why Ben doesn't like this scene, because it has coverage and he was complaining that his doesn't.
Yes. Yeah, I kind of felt like, I thought maybe the whole thing was no coverage. You know,
as per usual, Ben doesn't
actors.
Like this scene because Ben's not in it.
That's one strike against it, I won't lie.
There was something that I wanted to do, and I think hopefully Mosher will back me up on this. Didn't we want to shoot, like, inserts for his story? Like, kind of really fancy schmancy stuff.
Yes,
you guys,
we did. There's a
leveling Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, you standing there good. While Maddie did it. Kind of doing it like Francis Ford Coppola did some of that stuff in Dracula.
Mm. Right. But Ben wouldn't puppets. Take off his shirt, so he couldn't do it again. Yeah.
Then you remembered you were making a kid's picture.
Yeah, then I remembered that I'm not that fancy or good. But no, nobody would cough up the dough for it, so instead you just have two people talking
and
back and
people
forth.
People complain that it was people talking and you didn't show it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not your fault.
It never is, Vinny. Yeah. Thanks for enabling me.
It's good to have
I'll never get better. I'll never get better if you keep excusing me.
All right, it looks like crap.
Thank you. Now, actually, I remember there were some reviews of this movie after it first test screen, and some guy was talking about this scene, specifically saying that the coverage never matched and went back and forth. There's just a lot of armchair directors out there who, because I came from their midst, I think, because I'm not to the manor born, because I'm a guy who made a picture that just kind of took off and has a career, they feel like they can criticize me more harshly, I think, than most people.
That's a wonderful delivery.
That and because I'm just not that visually talented, but I lean towards the former.
Yeah, you know what, Kevin, you actually could do a lot more. You actually really are pretty visually talented. You're not that interested in that aspect of movies. What you like is the people, what they're saying to each other, and the words they're saying. That's a perfectly
valid
movie.
That's just one way to do it, exactly. Mosher says that quite a bit. Mosher's the one who's always riding me about.
But nobody fucking listens to a celebrity.
Yeah, I was like, did you hear what Ben said, Scott? It's brilliant advice. How come you never say anything like that? It's true. I actually ride myself very hard in the press about being a poor visual stylist, pretty much to steal the thunder of those who would say it. And I've been chastised by Mosher many times for it. And then in that Andrew Saris piece that you mentioned in Esquire, he said the same thing.
Yeah.
He said I should stop with the phony apologizing because I'm not that bad, and he knows that I don't really think that I'm that bad.
Yeah, it was like apologizing for Mallrats. You like Mallrats. I like Mallrats. Yeah. It's like you shouldn't do it because it's like a way of saying, you know what? You know, the guy who did Murder in the First, there was a lot of fancy camera moves, and, you know, it was constantly craning around the courtroom, and ultimately that doesn't make a movie good, in my opinion, anyway. You know,
there are some people who think of film as a visual medium, the idiots, and those are the people that I usually get taken to task by.
It is a visual medium. You're looking at things as wings. Yeah. You're seeing the people. You see them interact.
There was a really good Skywalker moment there when the sound sort of sweeps into the rears, and then this music comes up. Now, this film was the first one. Well, I mean, you did a 5.1 mix in Chasing Amy, but this was the first one that really had, like, a sound design.
You're a big fan of that sweeping into the rear, aren't you?
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, right. Skywalker did the sound, we should point out, and did a phenomenal job, and actually did it for a pretty decent rate, would say.
They cut the rates.
And seemed happy to do it. George Lucas himself supervised the whole thing. I gave him some tips about The Phantom Menace, which he obviously ignored.
Actually, he likes to cultivate filmmakers' careers who are no threat to him whatsoever.
George Lucas, I should point out, did not supervise this. I don't even think he saw the movie. Although, while we were there at Skywalker, they did show us the preview, the trailer for episode one before it came out.
Yeah.
That was about the only people kept saying, did you see Star Wars yet?
But I did once meet George Lucas. I had the opportunity to meet him, and I said, I asked him if he had seen the Star Wars reference in Clerks and Chasing Amy. He said he hadn't seen Chasing Amy, but he did see Clerks, and he really enjoyed the Star Wars reference. He thought it was very funny, and he liked it a lot.
Awesome. After years of wondering, that's been confirmed by Ben Affleck.
That's pretty cool.
How come the dude never called me to say, like, hey, why don't you do a dick and fart version of Star Wars for me?
I don't know. It's a mystery.
Meanwhile, because I could use the cash. Lord knows I'm at home squeezing the last bit of toothpaste out of the tube.
Now,
I need a job.
Yeah. Now, the people who, of
course... I think we all need a job. Is anyone working right now? Or is it no wonder we're doing the commentary?
I'm working on this.
Free time.
Yeah,
free time.
Making a salary. Yeah. Me and Mosher are working on our ill-fated cartoon for...
Now,
you're between pictures. Muse, the Echo spokesman.
Yeah.
Lee...
Negative.
The elevator picture. Lee was offered, without giving away too much, Lee was offered a killer elevator picture.
Remake of an
elevator. Oh, God, a remake of The Lift?
But for a bunch of cash, they offered you a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We won't say we won't say any more. Lee's a little uncomfortable.
Look at him. He's like, Lee's like, I Kevin, need to work you've done enough to hurt my career already.
Lee's like, I haven't said
isn't
no
that
yet.
Kevin and Scott on the radio there?
Yeah, it was a little piece of dialogue we stole from Chasing Amy.
Yeah, there was originally the radio a song bit. There, but you changed it.
It was originally You Dropped the Bomb on Me, yeah, but it was a little too expensive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Later on, when Jay and Silent Bob were driving in the car with Bethany, originally there was a Beastie Boys track mm-hmm. in there, and they should can that. It wasn't they. Two of them said yeah. One of them said...
It was just we ran out of time because they all had to see it, and the last guy didn't have time to see it, and so we had to pull it out. But also, at a certain point...
I believe
point,
MCA
they
had to ask the Dalai Lama about it, and he yeah. said no.
Oh.
See, look at that, the fly sound effects. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's some craft.
That's a nice pushing.
It is. You like that, don't
that's
you?
The craft and art of filmmaking right there. It's not all visuals. It's also an audible medium.
It's a welcome.
Yeah, the sound is great.
Welcome, Matt. Too. Sound is cool, yeah. isn't it? It's,
point out that the music is done by Howard Shore.
Brilliant yeah. Howard Shore.
He scored most of Cronenberg's films.
He scored and Seven.
Silence
he scored
of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs. He's been around forever. He was the first band leader on Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
Really?
A great, yeah. Fantastic that. History and a really sweet guy and very, very Canadian.
As a matter of fact, didn't Film Threat, like, praise that score to high heaven?
That's a good shot right
for
there.
For what it's worth.
Yeah. That is a great
this
shot.
This is the thing where you're menaced with the old slap shot of the car keys. This is an old cinematic trick.
Yeah, I mean, it's an oldie but goodie. That
here we
out
have a Scorsese
steal.
Stretch coming up, though.
Yeah, which wasn't pulled off very, very well.
It looks kind of interesting, though, because it's like...
It reminds me of the Jaws stretch.
Yeah.
The Jaws stretch where, what's his name? Brody's on
Shredder,
the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, Roy Scheider. And you can obviously tell it's a stretch. I actually just watched Goodfellas again yesterday, and that stretch in the diner is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
amazing.
Because it does it both.
Yeah.
You know?
Phenomenal. We didn't have that stretch going no. for it.
Well,
basically, we wanted to do a commentary on Goodfellas. Talk about how cool it was.
It's no Goodfellas, is it?
Oh, the entrance. Yeah. Then when the movie begins, many people felt.
Mm. Now, that shot of them jumping off the car was shot months later in New
it
Jersey.
It was, and I ruined my back doing it.
Once again.
And there was one point where I think you were going to leave and Mosier was going to make the jump in your place.
Yeah.
So, where, and there's a picture of me and Mosier dressed up as Jay and Silent Bob. Well, I mean, it's not out of the ordinary to see me dressed up as Silent Bob, particularly in my bedroom at night. But Mosier wearing the Jay outfit was kind of funny.
Nails lighter.
Yeah, it's product placement. You can buy that nails lighter at Jay and Silent Bob.
Where is it?
Oh, it's located at 35 Broad Street, right back to New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
Or check us out on the web.
Did you see that shit, man? I know there were just kids.
Muse.
Oh, yeah, this
I
is Muse's
say.
Finest hour. He really did shine. Broke through whatever glass ceiling he was laboring under and still didn't get nominated by the Academy, but did win Best Actor in a Comedy from High Times, yes?
Yeah.
Well deserved. Right. Richly
well deserved. Pot smokers of the world have united and voted you as their favorite actor comedian.
Because they don't feel like you're a poser, you know what I mean? They feel like you're really living the lifestyle.
But you're not really a big fan of pot, are you? I mean, there was a
Fast
time. Well put.
What?
There was a time, but not now.
Well, we're here to pick up chicks. Do you smoke grass, the reefer?
Yeah.
This is where I lose the High Times award. They're like, we thought you liked pot. Give us that back. Jay, for the record, Jason loves pot.
Thanks for the rescue.
And also for any of the kids, pot's terrific. You know, if you're just a kid, and then 12, 13, start out, it's cool.
Pot and pure grain alcohol.
Yeah. And you'll notice that a lot of people in here are smoking. That's good for you, too.
Yeah, it's true. We're all kind of addicts in our own young
life. Not me.
Fuck this town, man. I'm going back to Jersey and starting up the business again. I can kick the shit out of little kids in Red Bank and make myself
a profit. That's an 80-yard line.
Uh-oh.
In case we don't remember.
Again, assuming that the audience is made up of complete idiots.
Who's back?
Jeff Anderson, ladies and gentlemen. First time back in a VSQ production since Clerks. I thought he did quite admirable. I thought he outshone both of you guys in this sequence.
Admirably and outshone, but other than that, well said.
I like that little bit where you cut your finger.
Especially
you
know, since
you're supposed to be an immortal.
The little thing.
Harmed by nothing, and yet you could cut your finger.
Oh, I feel pain.
Way to ruin the illusion that I was trying to create for the audience with your little bit of business. Dude, you can't sit there looking at stuff and act like, ooh.
Everyone,
you see that owl.
Like,
ow,
what am I doing? It doesn't matter. You're not talking.
I remember in one sequence, you were like, can I get a Band-Aid? You were ad-libbing like mad.
Are you going to put in some of the Mad Lib takes?
I'm definitely putting in the one Mad Lib tape. You actually should pay me not to. The one Mad Lib tape, Mad Lib take that you guys did on the bus, which you were like, Kevin, can we do one just for us? And I said, all right. Ugh. And they just won an Oscar mere moments before that. That's true. While we were making this picture, you won for an Oscar for writing.
Yeah. Maybe you should have taken that as a hint. And we're trying to tell you, go another way.
Yeah, that's very true. I've often told you to stop ad-libbing.
All the time.
On our sets.
Every day.
And you keep maintaining that it could work. And
one of them will work.
I won't say it anymore if we ever work together again. I keep telling him, why don't you save it and put it in a picture of your own? And he did, and he won an Oscar. So
I actually can honestly say that I think it's too. I feel like the people didn't really appreciate how original and unique this screenplay was. I mean, this is a script I had the strongest reaction of any I've ever read, and I've read a whole lot of them by now. Yeah, granted, a lot of them are just sort of uninteresting, but this movie is like, if you actually just look at the screenplay, it's exceptionally kind of unusual, unique, fresh, and original. I thought it was kind of overlooked in the award circuit this year. Just me, I could be wrong.
Yes, you're calling.
Well, didn't she get nominated for Independent Spirit Awards?
Yeah, the screenplay got nominated for Independent Spirit Award.
Richly deserved.
But who got ignored, I thought, was the cast. I really thought the cast would take some nods. I mean, if not from the Academy itself, then at least from some critics' groups. But nothing. Listen to this monologue my man tells. Muse, you were quite brilliant in the movie.
Yep.
Do you have any comments on this sequence?
My motivation was J. Muse.
It was a brilliant choice to pronounce Illinois as Illinois.
Yeah.
That's maybe a stroke of genius, Alexa, which I haven't seen in quite some time.
Actually, very early on in the editing, you were showing this sequence to, like, colleges.
Yeah.
And
getting chastised
for it. A bit of flack for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Everything was supposed to be kept on the hush-hush.
Meanwhile, you're posting about it on the internet.
I post about it. I would sell clips down at the store, Jane, Silent Bob, Secret Stash.
When I got to Pennsylvania, he had the whole script memorized.
He did.
Remember that?
I remember we impressed upon Muse for a long time, from Clerks, that one day we'd do this movie and he had to be very prepared because he had more dialogue than he ever had before. And when we started casting it up, we would tell him stuff like, we got real actors in it this time, not just Lee and Affleck. We have real actors like Alan Rickman. And he said, who's that? I said, that's the guy from Die Hard. And he said, who? Bruce Willis. I said, no, Alan Rickman, yippee-ki-yay. And he goes, oh, him? I said, yeah, well, he's done more movies than that. He's a very famous British actor, and Brits invented acting. And you should, you can't snoogans and snoochie-boochies around him, because he'll just eat a scene right around him. Very good. And you got to be on your toes and then look out for that dude. And so when we rehearsed, when we first sat down to rehearse in Pittsburgh, I sat down with Jason by myself because in the past, sometimes we've had to start rehearsals early to start going through and making sure he knew all his dialogue. And he sat down and he had no script. And I said, where's your script? And he said, I don't need it. I said, yeah, right. And so I started reading opposite him, and he did. He knew all his lines. But he also knew everyone else's lines as well. The dude had committed the whole script to memory in a Good Will Hunting fashion. And I said, dude, why'd you memorize the whole script? And he said, I want to piss off that Rickman dude.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
And then you met Alan later on. You guys actually became good buddies.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you talk about, like, Jason's really good, Muse, Lee, everybody. This is, like, really fun. Live performances, and I mean, there were some good reviews, but I think one of the reasons why it's overlooked is for one reason, like,
there were great reviews, not some good reviews. I mean, we got largely great reviews.
But I mean, in terms of the cast wise, like, I just skipped through it and say, what did they say about me?
You're right.
You know what I mean?
Affleck was adequate.
Yeah, like, a lot of times, because one of the reasons you were lamenting how well the cast is great, and why. And what I'm saying is, like, the concept of the movie, for one thing, and the themes, and the fact that it was the controversy sort of overshadowed a lot of that. And also, I think one of the things people don't understand is how difficult it is to act in a movie like this, for one thing. It's dialogue heavy. For another thing, there's these two totally different tones. There's this sort of fantasy tone. Three, really. There's a comic elements of the movie, and there's also this like sort of serious dramatic side. It's a lot to try to do. I think people just kind of took it for granted, but and I think directorially too, if I could just continue to blow the horn in this movie, that's not easy to do. You got to pull out to make those things all for sort of work in one movie without going, well, it was a really serious story that wasn't funny, or it was kind of funny but I didn't buy into any of the drama.
It was an ambitious picture, and in some of the test screenings we saw like those reactions where people said it was really funny, but then it got very serious sometimes. And then people going, it was very, very moving or very
thought-provoking.
But like, then all of a sudden they'd make some sort of dumb kid's joke. And the idea from the outset, from the beginning, and all the way through to the release was to make a movie that did both. Why just make one movie? Why not try to make two? I thought it struck a decent balance.
Chasing Amy kind of straddled the same line.
It did.
Except
this
you added far more to this. Yeah.
Except then you take Chasing Amy and then put it like superheroes and religion and all this. Look, Scott Mosier and his girlfriend Monica making out yet again.
Yes, they did that in Chasing Amy. Good call. You should be the new Viewskew historian.
I'm not arch enough.
Dry, I believe, was the term.
Dry.
Dry. Yes,
Mosier. Nice, like truck driving mustache right there. Totally Reynolds.
Mosier, they showed us the outfit and we thought he looked like a sailor. I mean, look at me. He looks like a sailor.
He looks like a...
So in the credits, we credit him as smooching seaman.
Yeah.
Or smooching seaman.
Funny.
And then we credited Monica as seaman smooching.
Here comes more of that.
Come on, that's stay for the credits, folks. Funny stuff.
More
funny
than graphic
anything
violence.
You see. Yeah, look at that.
That's
look at
nice.
The blood.
That's nice.
I believe
that's
Matt Damon's first time ever... killing somebody in a movie.
But he fired a gun in Courage Under Fire.
A gun,
what about
killed
Geronimo?
And also did a lot of heroin in Courage Under Fire.
He did a lot of heroin.
Shot between his toes.
Yeah.
His character, ladies and gentlemen, not Matt Damon himself.
I thought he shot someone in Geronimo.
I don't think so. I think other guys killed
off the bus laughing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, well, we always try to get the best performances possible out of our extras on USQ features. This was, I think, the first thing you shot on the movie. The very first thing. And this was the night after, or the night you guys came home, or the night after you guys came home from winning your award, if I remember correctly.
The night after we won the award, we shot the stuff with the Welcome to New Jersey, stepping over the highway, I think.
No, that was last.
That was last. Oh, that was really? The last thing you did. That was when you're like, get me off this chicken shit picture. I am now an Academy Award winner.
Remember those ones?
And then proceeded to do a Sandra Bullock picture.
It is demonstrate my range.
It was a large demonstration.
Hogwash and something.
Exactly. Alternate it.
Now, wasn't this a location that was used several times?
Can I say I like Sandy? I like that movie.
That's
a
nice
person.
Right there.
We pretty much small-minded fools like you.
We pretty much used this location for the entire movie. Every once in a while. I think we use it twice. Actually, the breakdown is on the other side of the bridge, and then this sequence is on this side of the bridge.
And there's Chris Rock.
Rock's ass.
Digitally erased.
He had a thong on.
Is that you?
Did you
know?
Muse showing us some of that famous gas of his.
Mm. Cut that out.
Nice.
It's a small
chick.
Room, dude.
Rock's delivery when she says, "You knew Christ?"
Yes.
It's nice.
That's great.
And there's a digital effect to take out the underwear he was wearing.
The close-up. Yes. We took off the dancer's belt he was wearing. It's very brave of Rock to get the hell down on the pavement. It was hot pavement. You know, just bare, except for a tiny dancer's belt. See him? He's this Con Air Con shit.
Yeah, ripping
it's my nod to Jerry Bruckheimer. Friend of yours? Friend of mine, too.
Friend of mine. We both worked with
Jerry Bruckheimer.
Remember you take a picture of me and Rock with our shirts off?
That wasn't here. That was behind the doors of the hotel room. We won't talk about that. Yeah, there was a shot that hung on the door of the office for the longest time of Muse and Rock with their shirts off, hugging each other, like arm around each other's shoulder. Looked like a couple kids looking for a fire hydrant in the city during the summer.
Dude, this piece can be rubbing inside of your armor.
I think it's the first time I take my coat off in the pictures ever.
I'll do my best to tuck it back.
That's a great piece of writing, really, in some ways. His piece is going to be rubbing around the inside of your armor. Kind of thrown away, you know, but...
Decay and necrophilia. Told you he was the undead. Not the undead, the dead. I died. You know, Christ told me the secret to
direction.
Dad, 1-800 collect.
He was actually, he was really great.
Now, wasn't this actually?
I thought he did phenomenal, and he not only was he funny, but he also carried some really weighty, dramatic moments.
That line is great.
Yeah. That line is Rock's line. His last last take, last day, last shot. And I didn't like the line we had in there. And I said, Rock, if you want to make up a line, throw it in there, you can. And he was like, oh, did everyone hear that? I can make up a line. Kevin's letting me ad-lib. And he did, and it was such a great line we kept. It. One of the few ad-libs I've ever kept.
We should take that as a hint.
Hey, we let you dance in Chasing Amy. That was an ad-lib bit.
Yeah.
It was an ad-lib
when?
Bit.
When he's like...
I'm at the table?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's your birthday. It's your birthday.
Isn't there a Martin reference?
Yeah, he starts singing Martin.
Yeah.
Which Maddie starts singing at on the bus.
Yeah.
It's all connected.
Mm-hmm. What we learn is Ben and Matt are huge fans of the Martin theme song.
Show and the song. And the man.
Same facial expressions from J-Muse.
That's a fantastic little bit of business there.
It's not so much that it's like the visual thing, it's the blocking, really. You know what I mean? Kevin's a big fan of the I Love Lucy blocking, where everybody walks to the frame and just stands shoulder to shoulder.
Well, I believe in the Desi Arnaz three-camera shoot theory, although we've only ever used one camera. So if I get the other two cameras working, everything would be okay.
Well, I thought
I'd get a real Fred and Ethel moment going
you
there.
You did use two-camera for Selma. For a lot of that sequence.
For her dancing?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, those stripping sequence, and there's 60 cameras.
Here's another digital effect.
Two for the movie, three for home use.
Lovely. Here's another digital effect. And watch the catches the top part. They had to fix that. Class.
And here we go with Jason Lee.
Back to the house.
Remember how those horns kept breaking and getting dented by the hat?
Yeah.
It was kind of depressing.
You love that seersucker suit, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Did you keep it?
No. I don't get shit.
I have the hat. I believe I have the suit, too. Well, which you can probably see on display in Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash.
Have mercy.
Yeah, look at all the nodding, Ben.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's classic.
All the nodding, baby.
Lee
acts with his head. Look at that side look.
Well,
I'm
going
to have some of the Gagothan. Quickly looks to the side. Do you remember shooting that sequence and it went on a little longer and you sat in the chair and I was outside?
Yeah.
And you looked out and all of a sudden you started laughing uncontrollably.
I have that take.
Yeah, we'll probably use that somewhere. Some funny, silly outtakes.
Look at all this production design here. All the movies all
Rat
over
face,
the place.
Brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant man.
If you see the playset in the wide shot, if you freeze it, it's a giant meat grinder. There's a big handle on the side.
Nice.
The slide.
Stuff, isn't it?
This sounds creative enough to have warranted its own establishing shot.
It was all really genius, and we just
it had establishing shot.
It did.
I got left in the movie.
It's in the movie, you jackass. Once again, not paying attention. I'm not in the scene.
Yeah,
this is where Ben goes to popcorn,
just
trying to pick up girls in the theater. Hey, I'm in this movie.
Hey, you recognize anyone from this movie?
Kevin, I gotta give you some props. As
Sweet.
They say.
I'll take props because I
streets.
Take shit from everyone else here.
Directing scenes.
Yes.
That you're in.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
You know, I don't really give it much thought. I'm only there for the wide and for the stuff that I'm in it with Jason. Usually it's very rare that Jason and I are photographed without one another
in this picture.
But every other time, I'm off riding the monitor, watching it.
Specific facial gestures, though.
Wonderful mind.
Responding to, the dialogue. Thinking of that and paying attention and making sure Muse and...
It's the video tap I really got to give props for, because you can go back and watch stuff. We videotaped the stuff that I was actually in, so I can go back and watch it. And if I was too in the moment of the scene. In the moment of the scene was this guy. If you watch Muse, there's a lot of stuff that's there and stuff that didn't get into the cut, where Muse is actually thought processing as his character.
Mm.
Like at one point he says, apostle again, Muse is going, apostle? Apostle, but not out loud, just thinking to himself. There's a lot of that. Muse, very much in character, this movie. Not just a guy doing lines, just he was Jay.
And the delivery here, I don't buy it.
Of who?
Muse's delivery when he says, I don't buy it, is amazing. Best delivery in the movie, Muse.
It actually was somewhere else, though. It got moved around in the editing.
It did. I mean, I think you'll see in this sequence on the cut stuff.
There's a longer version.
There's much more of Muse and really funny lines that we had to cut out just because the picture was long.
Rock handles this really well, all this dialogue.
This was a tough scene to direct because Linda wasn't talking to me this day.
Oh. Yeah, why don't you go into that? You said you were going to talk about...
I forget why she wasn't talking to me. She was very unhappy on the picture because people, while we were making the movie, people kept flying away and doing other things. Because you worked on the picture, you knew you didn't make much money, and everyone else pretty much the same way. So people had to pick up change in other places. Some of us were going off to do Shakespeare in Love. Other people were... trotting off to do
Lethal Weapon 4,
except Oscars.
I mean, people were in and out sometimes, particularly because, like, not everyone's in every scene. Linda's in every scene,
which is actually not that uncommon.
Not uncommon at all.
You know, you have to work, especially with a huge cast like this, and you know, people come and go because they're in it or not in it. Linda's the lead, so obviously she's there the whole.
She's there the whole time. She resented being there, I think, and while other people were going away, but she had to be there.
Yesterday, I wasn't sure God even existed. Now I'm up to my ass in Christian mythology.
Let me let you in on a little inside info. God hates it when it's referred to as mythology.
Oh, well, then let's ask the prophets what we should call it instead. Where did those two assholes go?
Oh, yeah.
He's bringing up some painful memories, for heaven's sakes. Yeah, the naked, almost naked girl comes on, and suddenly Muse is back in the scene.
The closest to nudity you've done. Oh, no, actually, Mallrats had actual nudity.
Had nudity in it.
Now, this sequence was really created in the editing because you cut the entire ending of it.
And the middle, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll see when you go back and look at the cut footage that the sequence goes on, and there's interaction between us and the gang members, and... And then there's the Fat Albert song at the end that was cut, which we had up until Cannes, and then we lost after Cannes.
So now you had this.
There's Dwight, who played Hooper, and Chasing Amy, right in the middle.
And sitting next to Kevin and Jason is Ming Chen.
Webmaster, who created the ViewAskew website, which you all know and love so well, and the Affleck.com website, and anything we have involved in the net, Ming does, and he's a genius, and we love him.
So in the editing and the sound design, you had to make it seem like Salma was inspiring them to give her.
Well, yeah, we played that up a little more. We actually played that up in a way that it never existed before.
Yeah.
Really, the sequence was about us bidding against those guys and the escalating fight. Like, right there, Dwight would pull a gun out, yeah. So watch the cut sequence and see how that sequence went.
What was the original running time in the movie the first time you cut it through?
Well, there was a very loose assembly, I would say.
Yeah.
That was like 3 hours.
3 hours and 17 minutes.
17 minutes. The movie was 2 hours and...
10 with credits, I believe.
So you cut an hour and 10 minutes out of the movie.
Yeah.
But a lot of that was really just cutting beats between lines and, you know,
Very rarely did we leave the whole
245
sequence.
Was like the real first cut.
Yeah. You guys are actually the only people I know who do not use professional editors.
Some people say that's to our detriment.
I'm wondering.
this sequence was supposed to be a very... At the end of it, Matt's supposed to kill everyone in the room. Hope I didn't spoil anything for anybody. But there was a storyboarded, elaborate... John Woo style we were gonna go for and really push the edge of the envelope visually. However, at the last minute, I chicken shitted out and decided to just do it off camera.
That's why if you look at all the board members, there are all these really burly, big stunt guys.
They're being played by
and
stunt guys.
We flew them out there, paid them a bunch of money, and we said, no, we brought you here to act.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. I noticed the church in the background.
Ben's delivery. In this scene.
Phenomenal.
I have to give it up.
Yeah, thumbs up all the way up.
Well, this whole
I'm really, really proud. This is my favorite acting that I've done. I was really proud of my work in this movie. I worked really hard. I loved this script for so long, and I really wanted to do it for Chasing Amy, and I always thought of, in my career, I thought like, okay, I can do these movies if I can just do this role in Dogma, and then I can break out, and I can, and
as a student, break out in something else.
Yeah, but I always saw this as like, such a plum, great role, to chance to do all this different stuff, and...
I don't know that guy's name, but he's in John Waters' Pecker. He plays the father.
I saw him in an episode of Law and Order a couple weeks ago.
He was good, actually, as well.
Yeah, he's really good. Guy plays Whitlin. Very, very dry.
This sequence is just really well put together.
We should point out that wasn't really card from an onion, but instead from a jicama.
Yes. Jicama, man.
Matt's really good here.
Matt's fantastic here. Yeah.
Matt's really good in the movie. What are we going to say? Matt sucked in the movie. Matt was really good in the movie, though.
You see. A mock-up.
But Matty's performance, I mean, he was really always unsure of himself. I mean, the cat, you've worked with him.
Matt had never done comedy. He was really uncomfortable doing comedy. And he was like, is it funny? Am I funny? I kept saying, Matt, you're really funny.
He's really
funny. You know how you're doing this right. And but he was...
The whole time. Because Matt's actually a funny guy in real life. He's not as funny as you.
He's incredibly funny.
But he's a funny guy. And he's got a really great sense of humor, and he's very smart. But in this flick, he was always kind of second-guessing himself.
He's not sure of himself,
very nervous.
Comedically.
He finally saw the movie for the first time at the New York Film Festival,
I think he was really pleased with it. Because I think he really, up until he saw the movie, didn't know whether or not he was funny, he could do comedy, had never done it. Felt pretty good dramatically, and works really hard. The difference between comedy and drama is like, it's not, you know, with drama, it's like, a lot of times, the harder you work, you know, the more results you're going to get, and the deeper you get invested. Comedy's like... more nebulous, and it's just sort of subjective. And but to his credit, he was scared and terrified, but really committed and went for it.
He did, and he did a balls to the wall job, and he is actually very funny. And I always, when Ripley came out, and people were saying it's a very courageous choice for him, I didn't think it was nearly as courageous as this.
He could do that, and he would really. Was brave.
Ripley was kind of like what Matt does, and this was a movie that Matt hasn't done.
Gone away
yet.
From his strengths. Yeah.
Brace.
Oh yeah, I love these. Their offenses. They're just so.
This is always my favorite scene. When I first read the script, I've always loved this thing. It's the idea of going in and sort of passing judgment. The big concern about this was, you know, this was, of course, written many years ago, and then the Columbine Massacre happened. A lot of people felt as though, you know, two guys coming in trench coats, passing judgment on people, and then
shooting them
was going to bring up, like, in fact, there was a lot of talk about cutting it because
a week before they wanted us to go back in and cut it off.
And the great irony was when the movie was back at its 2-hour-and-45-minute length, our first real cut of the picture, we were maintaining that, like, of any sequence in the movie we could cut, this would be the easiest to cut because there's very little to do with the plot.
It's definitely a B-plot.
It's a B-plot indeed, but it's a great scene, just very B-plot. But just like, no way, it's Ben and Matt, and you're not cutting that, that's gold, it's like printing money. And then as we got closer to Cannes with Columbine, suddenly that all changed, and it was just like, we should cut that sequence. And we said, no, man, it's cool.
That's a real
Columbine
sensitivity,
will,
so people
will
think
go
that,
away.
Like, you know, nobody cares, and how, but people, actually, the opposite is true. People are really highly sensitive to that stuff. And
yeah. But what kills me is that, again, the way the sequence ended up, all the violence was suggested.
It's the off-camera sounds, literally. I mean, without for the language, this movie could be a G movie.
You see a spot of blood on the door, and that's it.
Who's Spirit Awards?
Actually mine, but we borrowed Spirit Awards.
They sent us
some dummy trophies to put in the scene. I wouldn't use my own.
I was always amazed how, like, freely, all of a sudden you can just kind of get one, you know what I mean? Like,
you
I
can
did
pretty much buy yourself a Spirit Award this juncture. Yep.
Forgot my little voodoo doll.
If you look during the sequence, you'll see right now the frame, the glass, the plexi is taken off of the Surly Duck poster. In the wide, you'll see it is in there, and in any other coverage, it's not. That's because we realized that we could see ourselves in the reflective surfaces, something we only picked up on this movie. Classy delivery of a line coming up.
Nice bit of music there by Howard. Oh, yeah. That is a classic delivery, but in the can version, it was a different take.
It was a different take. Same delivery, different take.
Yeah.
We moved in.
Works better close.
Stunt acting.
Yeah. I always thought that guy to Whitland's immediate left should have been a whole feature about him.
Some very funny ADR there.
I like this bit of business. It's a classic Affleck right there.
Could have been a Mad Lib, actually.
Yeah, hardly.
You don't even have a shot of the room in this version, do you?
No, because
you
because
people
are carnage, antsy about the blood.
But, which, again, you don't see. It's only the aftermath.
Maybe a pure soul, but she's dressed like a flight attendant for something.
Well, we figured that the heads of a powerful corporation would dress like flight attendants.
Just what you know.
That was nice. That was nice.
And look like stuntmen as well. If you want to see that movie statue that's on the table, well, you can pop on down to Jay and Silent Bob's secret statue.
Where's that again?
That little bar, the exterior of that bar is in Highlands, the town I grew up in.
Yeah.
Doesn't even look like that anymore. The rest of it was shot, the insides, the interiors, if you will, shot in Pittsburgh. Salma Hayek, which we really, really didn't comment on that much before. Look at that. Such a really great little person.
She's a dynamite.
Well, she's little in stature.
She is diminutive.
She's very, very small.
But she's got spunk.
She's got a lot of spunk.
She runs around and she's very friendly.
What, D's? And she's got the most imitatable accent on the planet.
Was this a set or was this some location?
This was the location that we made it into a set. No. She was a lot of fun to work with, and boy, did she work hard.
Yeah.
Really, really wanted to
do this. She had a dialect coach.
She had a dialect coach, which a lot of people said, oh, I still don't understand her, but I understand her perfectly.
Yeah.
People are too hypercritical.
She got good reviews.
She wanted to wear that little thing in her head.
Yeah.
She's the Hindu muse.
Yeah. And the hair is all over the place. I think the only time you see her real hair is when she's stripping.
Mm-hmm.
When she's dancing, those were her real ponytails. But this, what she wears for the rest of the movie, this hairpiece, took about an hour and change to put in every day.
A long time.
She was always griping about how it gave her a headache, too.
Yeah, but it was her choice. She really wanted to wear it. But she was a pleasure to work with. A lot of fun. Sometimes, like, the jokes went over her head, but that was even funny as
Remember
well.
Remember when you had the meeting with
could
her at the hotel?
This was not funny. It could be that my stuff
Remember
wasn't
we had
my
the
speaking
meeting
to the
with
mic.
At the hotel? You know,
pull that mic closer to you.
Sure.
And what
sure,
the
we had a meeting with her at the hotel,
In Los Angeles.
Yeah, and she came with all those books, and she's like, "Oh, well,
she did. She did her research.
She was gung ho.
Any flack for the Home Alone?
Home Alone. I think Ben was good friends with. And he asked him at one point, did he have any comments about the Home Alone joke?
I didn't ask any of those people. I was scared it was going to hurt my career. I was like, cut it out of the movie.
Never heard anything about it. I heard nothing but laughs, Jason, for that Home Alone line. Took a lot of shit, no pun intended, for the shit in the toilet and the shit monster. That seemed to turn a lot of folks off.
It's pretty gross.
In a way that, but I mean, you look at something like the Austin Powers sequel, that terrible picture where he's drinking a cup of shit and the movie makes over $200 million. I don't get it.
We didn't have a synergistic advertising campaign for this movie.
No, to say the least, we didn't. Lionsgate, the folks who were good enough to pick us up when our distributor went the other way.
The way of the coward.
The cowardly way. I think they did a very serviceable job advertising the movie. It wasn't brilliant, but was pretty good. Got us out there. We made $30 million. In the hands of...
I also don't think they got death threats on Austin Powers 2.
Yeah, there was nothing like that. We did, for the record, get some death threats. We got a lot of hate mail. All before a single frame of film was seen by anybody. Once the film got out, though, not a sound, not an echo, not a word.
Although there were some inklings of that in the European release.
Yeah, same thing, though. Once the movie came out, nothing.
Nice digital shot.
Because take a look at this.
How could that threaten your religion?
God almighty.
A big piece of poop coming out of the floor.
Leave it to the Catholics to screw up civilization.
It's close, whatever. That's Ben's impression of Salma. Do your Denzel Washington now.
Listen, we're trying to stick with the movie.
It's not like when you do your impression.
I don't want to steal the show with my impersonation.
You are the modern-day Rich Little, and I just think your mimicry is on point. Just brilliant.
Doesn't matter if I'm in this case or not. Doesn't matter if I'm in this army or not. I'm going to find out the truth. I guarantee you that.
Available for parties, weddings, the occasional bar mitzvah.
Here comes
one of my favorite moments of the film.
We're
both very happy to be part of the gang. Running in like children.
And this is Ethan Suplee's voice.
Ethan Suplee, who was Willem and Mallrats and the eager fanboy at the beginning and end of Chasing Amy. Love those dick and fart jokes, love them. He did the voice of No Man. You know, heavily processed, of course.
A shit demon!
No Man
It's Guastini puppet, ladies and gentlemen. A guy in a suit. And when we were shooting this, the first guy in the suit almost died. He almost passed it. Well, he very nearly passed out, but was like couldn't breathe. It was the first time I've ever seen the on-set medic get used. All of a sudden, the person who was sitting to the side of the box was on their feet, like I'm on call. I got a job.
Well, actually, they did get used in Mallrats when Jeremy got
nailed
in
the nuts. That's right. But I wasn't watching that.
Yeah.
They gave him a band-aid for that.
But then another stunt guy had to jump into the suit after the other guy almost passed out.
We didn't have enough money to build a cooling system into the suit.
Mm-mm.
So it was just basically a very thick foam rubber latex on the outside.
There's some CGI. And
within about 5 minutes, you would sweat buckets and pass out.
Did that thing come
we didn't even talk about the Scooby-Doo cutaways of the fight sequence there.
No.
We were like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
And,
comedy. See, it's comedy.
Mm-hmm. It's pure comedy. If you don't get it, then I guess I'm just not that funny.
There was originally a
She's
lot more.
She's building a Molotov cocktail there. Yeah. That was her little bit of business she wanted to do.
Handshift.
And if you can understand her origin of the shit monster, well, God bless, because most people couldn't. But if you go back and watch the scene with the
subtitles,
you may be able to.
The Golgothan. You know what? I was on Craig Kilborn once, and they asked me as part of the five questions, where was the hill that Christ was crucified? That was supposed to be one of the stumpers, and I said, that would be Golgotha.
Very
Came
nice.
Came off like a well-educated scholar.
Which
but
you
in
are.
Fact, everything I know about the Bible comes from this movie, which is devastatingly tragic.
There's some everywhere right now. Rabbis and priests are letting out a collective depressive sigh. We thought we'd have a spokesmodel, and Ben Affleck apparently doesn't know much about the Bible.
How?
It's something of a Wizard of Oz element to this picture. A bunch of cats coming together on
a Wizard of Oz is kind of the most successful movie of all time, whereas this is the 86th highest grossing movie of the year.
I think, where were we, what number?
We were 65 or 63.
Don't take away from us, my friend. We weren't that far behind Forces of Nature.
Oh, you were ways back.
We were. Forces of Nature did about 50.
Yeah, about 55, that.
Yeah. Because it tackled those tough religious issues that people want to sit in the theater.
There's another View Askew regular, Gwen Turner.
Gwen Turner, writer of Go Fish.
I used to try to hit on her in Chasing Amy.
Psycho screenplay.
Remember that when I was trying to flirt with her in Chasing Amy?
Which didn't really pan out as she's a devout lesbian.
Yeah, it didn't go my way.
You look in the background, there's a little poster for a movie on ice. We littered a lot of movie stuff through it.
And there's also Darius. Is the name of the...
the bus line.
Yeah, another character who pops up in a lot of these films.
I thought your delivery right there was really
something
good.
Better.
Well, this is
here's the Lee introduction. You see, kids?
That's my Chevy Chase.
That's your Chevy Chase.
My Clark W. Griswold.
From Chevy Chase. I liked your delivery on catching or staying on
my favorite
bus.
Part.
Yeah, that was nice.
Thanks.
My favorite part.
This is a really warm feeling I'm getting now.
Which favorite
you like
part?
This part?
Yeah, I love when Jason does this much.
Inexplicably fond of this moment.
Are you right fond there? Of the little girl?
No.
I think Jason's waiting for something we cut out.
Yeah, I think he's waiting for the little girl.
I remember waiting for the little girl?
Let's talk about the scene.
Are you waiting for a part that's not going to happen? Are you really just bringing this thing to a grinding halt for something that's not going to happen?
I hope so.
In the background, a lot of graffiti merchandise. Graffiti makes a lot of our stuff, shirts, the Jay and Silent Bob action figures, available at Jay and Silent Bob Superstore.
This was actually a time when the horns were constantly getting crushed because you were pulling it off and on. And
particularly because the hat, he measured the
hat.
Is
this the first thing we did together with you in the movie, Jason? At this scene, I think it was.
Yes,
it was
the first thing.
It was our Chasing Amy reunion.
Yeah.
That was kind of funny.
And there's some outtakes from the scene.
Yeah, a lot of laughing going on here.
This is my cinematic partners, my co-star from Good Will Hunting, my co-star from Chasing Amy. It was a great union for me, reunion.
These are your life mates.
These are my people, my hetero life mates.
Hetero's question.
I thought we were going to come to a critical mass and the scene was going to achieve.
How did you like playing a villain, Jason?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finney just steamrolled your joke.
Yeah, no, it's called rescuing a man.
Yeah, Jay, you got to play a villain this time around. It was way different. You weren't Ben Affleck's sidekick. What was that like?
How do you know he's not my sidekick?
Yeah,
let's shout out
to
the train.
It was good to be on my own for once.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah.
You got to act opposite three kids who never say anything.
You didn't have me or London bogging you down.
Maul, by the way.
That train shot of the exterior we stole from another movie, I think?
Narrow margin.
If you recognize that train as the train that Gene Hackman and
something should stay magic behind the curtain.
We had to take it from them because we didn't have enough money. It was Gene Hackman. Who was the actress?
Gene Hackman and Archer.
Ann Archer, that's right.
And the guy from Hill Street Blues.
And a hell of a train.
Yeah.
And we took it. The inside of the train we built ourselves.
Yeah.
And to achieve the effect of the train moving, we just kept pushing on the set and the camera.
Poor man's homeless man's process.
Didn't they also
can I point out something for the record?
Running by outside.
Rock is wearing. Some people ask where Rock got his clothes after he fell from the sky naked. He pulled them out of a movie dumpster. He's supposed to be wearing a movie restaurant jersey.
Which you don't get at Jay and Silent Bob's.
We had to cut that out. And that jersey is available. Thank you, Jason, at Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash, Red Bank, New Jersey. Yeah, we did cut out garbage pick. There's a line which I don't know if you'll see in the cut stuff.
You'll see it.
If I have anything to say about it, we should take this moment to thank J.M. Kenny, who produced our last great DVD, Mallrats.
It's fucked up. You two aren't getting into any trouble, are you?
Hell no, we're just about to smoke a fatty with these two suave motherfuckers.
Columbia TriStar rescued us from video ignominy, you know, because being the. Wasn't putting us out, and Lionsgate doesn't have its own video division. Columbia TriStar, ladies and gentlemen, my new favorite video distributor on the planet. Great little bit of business right here.
Yeah, this wasn't in the canned version.
No, in the canned version was the Star Wars speech, which you'll see in the cut stuff.
Yeah.
Star Wars speech didn't go over that well. I thought Maddie was really good.
Oh, yeah. Wow, I didn't see this.
Did you ever see the picture?
You're
really good in it.
I didn't see this cut.
Yeah.
I didn't see that cut.
That's a good wig you have in the movie, too, Jay.
I have a wig on?
That looks good.
Oh. No, that's your hair, dude.
Oh,
it is? Don't let this dude tell you your business.
This is
a fantastic bravura piece of acting on behalf of Linda Fiorentino, ladies and gentlemen. The guy in the scene with her isn't half bad either.
He can be pretty flaky sometimes, but
I
think this is your finest moment leading up to your next finest moment.
Example of why the movie like this, all these different tones. You get this scene, which is supposed to play like kind of seriously, and this thing between us, and poop monster. And
you guys are just chilling out.
But it's kind of serious. It's realistic.
This was a big moment. I should point out a lot of people thought that this gay line was thrown in for your behalf, but that existed in every version of the script.
I remember.
It just so happened that the two pals who played the angels are alleged to be gay. So people thought it was a joke or commentary on that.
People used to allege that me and you were gay until they saw what you looked like when you shaved that beard.
My wife had the same reaction. I should point out that I got married in the course of this picture. Well, not in the course of shooting it.
Yeah.
But later on I got married. And I also had a child.
At Skywalker.
I got married at Skywalker where we were mixing.
Child, if any child is damned.
Some people said it was your child, and I said no. Not at all.
We're still waiting for the test.
I hope it is, because I'm going to live off your teat.
That's a wonderful little pause.
Your $20 million movie-making teat.
That day will never come if I keep doing pictures like this. I can assure you. Little kiddie movies with guys with flashlights outside the windows going, choo-choo.
I thought you loved that.
But Garcon
you called
was,
it quaint. Garcon was, Ben threw that in, and we kept it.
Yeah. People love that. People really love that.
People on the cards.
The
a little bit of business. He was sleeping, and I said, Rock, pull your shoe off. Use it as a pillow. I was just calling out things for him to do. In the test screening, one guy's card, it said, your favorite part of the movie, it's when he uses shoe for a pillow.
He caresses it. He gets it
some
ready
guys are paying attention.
It's amazing. But what was I saying, going back a little bit? Oh, I got married.
Yes.
I met my wife while we were right before we started shooting. She interviewed me for USA Today.
The woman that would like to listen to you talk and you're married.
She doesn't though. She's really not a fan of me or my business. But she loves me just the same. But she came to visit me while we were making this, which I feel made it a stronger picture as I was getting laid more.
Can't say the same for you. What was going on with you during that picture? Were you dating?
Solo. No, actually, I was dating Gwyneth, but she was in. She visited
That's
once,
right.
but
she was away.
In, largely in London.
Flying solo. Lee, of course,
doing
is married.
Doing a real movie, trying to make.
Lee, of course, is married, so he was. But Carmen didn't actually come to the set very much. I think she was there once.
Yeah.
I remember her being there.
Because I was
outside.
In and out, like, just for a couple
You were working
weeks.
On Mumford, Jason Lee's Mumford.
That's fine
right.
movie,
You were another
by
guy.
A fine movie.
You were rehearsing. You weren't shooting it.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You would fly
I
away
did,
from Mumford
After
rehearsals.
I finished Dogma, I did Mumford.
Muse was practically married on this movie.
Well, I moved in with someone the first day we went to Pittsburgh.
That's right.
Did you say you were doing someone?
Job, the day we got to Pittsburgh, yeah. Step funny. Mm. Your little girlfriend. Little in stature.
Stephanie. I love her.
Vinny, were you... You weren't out there that much,
no,
but were
No, I was there, no.
But were you celibate?
I love my wheel.
I was celibate at the time.
And Mosier, of course, was, as we've seen in the picture...
Making out on a bus.
Making out on a bus.
The whole shoot.
Everybody's sex lives became part of the... I love
my wheel.
You know, it's a real slow moment, right? Like, anybody getting laid?
Linda's really good in this scene. Linda's really good in the whole movie. Anyone care to add to that?
I think this is my favorite scene in the film.
Really?
If that helps.
My very favorite scene is when you see her nipples.
All right. Spoken like the true man amongst us. Did you like working with Linda?
Yeah, Linda didn't visit any of the stories that you talked about on me, really. She seemed very pretty. I mean, she's a fine actress. I've been a fan of hers since, obviously last
Vision
election.
Quest.
Since Gotcha. Let me lay Gotcha on you, which is a fine movie with Tony Edwards.
Yes.
Vision
she
Quest.
Played a
really
Russian.
Tony to his
Vision
friends.
Quest.
Since I've never met him. I'm going to go ahead and call him Anthony Edwards. But,
gone to this church in New Jersey.
Really?
Ruben Mandel, car 3. Ruben Mandel, car 3.
See? I'm supposed to stop a couple of...
We missed Rock's poopy trim.
Oh, yes.
Rock says poopy trim, echoing something that Ethan said in Mallrats. Some people were confused by it. I felt that held the picture back in the box office.
Of poopy trim?
Poopy trim is ass, like getting ass.
There's that wonderful...
Trim is pussy, and poopy trim would be ass.
Yeah. There's that
Where
wonderful...
Where did it come from?
I don't know. We just kind of made it up there.
Just
the
kind of moment
actually,
to
I said
ensure
it to Carol,
your films will remain
supervisor.
Forever
Carol.
Marginalized.
I know. I'll never win an Oscar. Carol, who is our script supervisor on Mallrats, was also a script supervisor on this picture. And poopy, I used to say poopy trim to her a lot.
Hmm.
She thought it was funny.
That was a great bit of nonverbal acting.
The stuntman's
Carol, the stuntman's daughter. Carol
backed out on Chasing Amy. I was really disappointed, actually.
No, she was going through personal problems. I think her father was sick or something. So way to bring everything down. Fair but fact. Carol Carol was also dating or almost engaged to this dude, Pete. And that's why when Jason wakes up here on the train, he says, "I didn't come in you, Pete, I swear." Which I asked him to do without telling Carol, our script supervisor, just to see how hard she would laugh. And then we kept it in the movie.
Did she laugh?
She laughed very hard.
Yeah.
And she laughed, just as she laughed very hard at Poopy Trim back when we shot Mallrats.
So kind of
in many ways, my whole career is about
you.
Trying to please Carol. Carol Banker.
It's all about Carol Banker.
This is your finest hour. I'm sorry we just missed it all. You're coming in with the dialogue here. But the whole moment where she's speaking and you're playing everything across your face.
I'm just glad that you framed out my enormous forehead.
Yes.
You'd probably see it in the VHS version, being that this is a Super 35 film.
Here's my laughable action scene, people called it. I thought it was pretty intense.
I remember I was laughing on this scene. I had to get thrown off the train.
Yes, because Rock was doing this.
Yeah.
Looking back.
Yeah, I was dying.
Get your fucking hands off me, you dickless
son! Watch this. I'm gonna see if you get a little piece of it.
Loki! Holy shit, the apostle.
That moment where, Matt turns around, we did about 5 takes of it, and right before he turned around each time, he was talking to me and delivering, like, further Star Wars speechifying.
Oh, right.
Continuing his dialogue about Star Wars. Excellent funny stuff. Hopefully we'll include that in the outtakes. One-liners.
There it goes. Did you see it? He did it.
Yeah. Where's Rock? There's Rock. See how he's missing? Bit of gaff there. Look at that performance.
No, fuck him. Yeah, look at him getting my back. Son of him. He's getting my back.
We should point out, coming up here soon,
There's a little bit of dialogue that's just not explained. Sure, perhaps we should try to explain it.
He's the character of Silent Bob, it turns out, is actually kind of an ancient spirit known to those who are in touch with these things. His ancient Germanic name is, of course, Schuler Bob. I recognize him as such before. All
right. How was this shot, Kevin?
Shot on a fake train in a dark warehouse.
Landing on a mattress.
Those are two stunt people.
Still the stunt people.
Here comes
The real actors.
See, he's Schuler Bob. Yeah. I'll get you for this, Schuler Bob. And the reason for that is because I told you that the Silent Bob in German was Schuler Bob. And you worked it in.
Not even true.
You worked it in. It's not true. You worked it in.
Tell me where the real Silent Bob came from.
The Silent Bob? Schuler Bob?
Silent Bob.
One thing at a time, let me finish my Schuler Bob. So Schuler Bob, Ben Reason... sitting there on the train. Ghostly man.
Nails next
to in your backwards acting rationale, it was that the angelic tongue was Germanic.
That's it.
So you called me Schuler Bob as a recognizing
me. I got back to my primal tongue.
Yes. And we kept it in. It was genius on the set.
We
laughed
kept
very
it in
much.
Because it was about you.
This is nice here, the location with the echoing and
great
stuff.
Great location, great performances.
Oh, yeah, a lot of this is played out in the wild.
Dare I say, great dialogue.
Yes.
So, Jay, what is the origin of Silent Bob?
Well, we were in Mallrats, and we were in the candy store, and Lee got beat up.
And you're like, come on,
up.
Silent Bob. Come on, Silent Bob. I'm sorry, we don't want to.
Yeah, this is some good delivery
this
here.
Fine moment.
Yeah, let's get a little.
What was this filmed at the airport?
Reverential.
This was filmed in it was filmed near the bus station.
Yep.
Oh. It was an underground garage, as you can see. And I think Yeoman, who was our cinematographer, did a really great
Bob
job.
Yeoman.
Didn't get enough props. Bob Yeoman, who shot Rushmore, amongst other things.
Jugster Cowboy.
Jugster Cowboy. He added more of those lights. I think those lights hanging down are his. They weren't natural.
He brought them in. No, we're servants.
Hey. You know, all I'm saying here is that one of us might need...
That's a good line.
Wake up!
This is the clip I felt if you were nominated for an Oscar, they would have, you know, shown when they say, for Dogma, Ben Affleck, or Ben Affleck Dogma, and then they'd show this with the words bleeped out.
Instead, I got a Razzie.
I got a Razzie, did you?
I don't think I hope not.
God, I think Salma got nominated
Salma
for Razzie for Wild Wild West and Dogma.
What's a Razzie?
It's the opposite of the High Times Oscar. It's a bad award. It's not good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they didn't like her too much.
You didn't give me a Razzie, did you?
No, I didn't get one.
This is an important turning moment in the film because at this point...
This is where Bartleby kind of loses it.
Yeah.
This is where they switch
the turn gets real. The movie gets real heavy and ponderous.
Ponderous?
Which is why it failed commercially.
It didn't fail commercially.
I think it's about the 8th highest grossing Ben Affleck movie in the marketplace this week. I should point out, while we're recording this, you have a movie in theaters right now, Boiler Room, and a movie coming out next week, Reindeer Games.
I really have a very small cameo-type Janine Garofalo-esque in this movie role in Boiler Room, but Reindeer Games...
It's funny, because they're hanging the whole marketing campaign on your appearance.
Well,
and we should also point out, you just hosted Saturday Night Live last night.
I did, though that'll be far back in the public consciousness by the time this...
You were good, man. You shone.
Thank you.
I think the career highlight for you is being in a mango sketch. That's just me. Look at that point. It was real nice right there.
You shut your...
You
fucking
do! You
up,
sound
sir?
Like Lucifer, man! You fucking lost it!
Do you guys have fights like this all the time? You and Matt. Accusing each other.
I'm like, why don't I want to drive?
What happens to the proud when they take on the throne?
You should go back to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Sorry.
How do you know what's going to happen before it happens? You're a trickster.
Another one of
whenever
those.
I write a movie for you, I always put in a scene where you push a guy against the wall.
What is that?
Because you're built like a brick shithouse. You're a strong man.
Ever slamming guys around.
It was a nice little wipe. Another one of those little comic book.
Little comic book Star Wars wipes, we kept calling them.
Call them Gilligan's Island's wipes.
Stealing them from Empire Strikes Back.
Did you decide to do that beforehand, or was that only when you got the Avid and you saw all the cool effects?
I don't know. I think that was
the cheapy little video effects. that I like.
They were like, what is the least expensive yet stylistic? This sequence got cut down severely.
Yes, this was really shaped in the
This
editing.
Got cut down in the parking lot.
Yeah, before we shot.
The sequence went on for about three more pages. And he told the whole story about Nag Hammadi.
Chris Rock
the
theology.
The scrolls and the Gnostic Gospels and had to take it all down. Thankfully, even, because Stigmata used the same stuff later on anyway.
But even the photo, the original edit of the sequence that you shot was much longer.
I never saw Stigmata.
You'd have loved it.
What are volumes of text dealing with the missing 18?
There's a really cool moment in the scene, which will be in the cut stuff, where we throw the pot and Muse go chase it. It's a really funny bit where Muse keeps mouthing off during the scene. As it stands now in the scene, he basically doesn't say anything to his kind of
his big line,
which was the biggest laugh I think we've ever gotten ever in any of the movies we've ever done.
But which big line in this scene?
Yeah, it was when he goes, so that would make Bethany Clark black. Huge. But, the Muse used to say a lot of things during the scene, the J character did, and at one point Rock would turn over and go, Biggie, and then I'd just reach over and grab his bag of weed and throw it into the woods, and he was a fucking dick, and he runs off and chases it. It was really funny stuff, but we had to cut it out. And that
because
probably
it
held
was
us back.
Funny.
Yeah, because it was funny. Anything that's really great, we have to cut out.
How was it to shoot this? I mean, you shot this in the middle of the night, out in the middle of the night.
It's a little cold. Yeah. I remember there were heaters around the set that day. Some bugs.
That's a wonderful anecdote from the set. It's like because the audience can't be there, and maybe they want to know. What was the temperature
chilly.
Like?
Mm-hmm.
Were there bugs?
It was chilly. There were some insects. I had some repellent and a heater.
Didn't you actually shoot, like, straight through the dawn?
It was shot in Antarctica. I mean, like, oh, it's kind of cold. And the long johns out here, you can't see them, but...
The seats weren't very comfortable. And I think most of the crew people thought I didn't know what I was doing. We had a good crew on this
bit
movie.
Bit of near mutiny.
Really nice crew. Good people all around.
Good Pittsburgh people.
Good Pittsburgh people. Shoot Pittsburgh, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. That's what I say.
Right to work.
Great costumes.
Great costumes.
Costumes.
Abigail put those costumes together.
Abigail Murray.
Abigail Murray. It was her idea to give the angels the hoods.
And the...
It's also her idea for the angels to wear hush puppies.
The world is... Yeah.
Did you wear hush puppies?
It's just a subtle thing.
I sported hush puppies, yeah.
I had hush puppies.
Why was that her idea?
She was really
attached
to
it. They were free, man.
Yeah, she was like, well, number one, angels would wear hush puppies. Number two, they're free. We shot this in a real stanky, dirty lake.
How'd you do it with him on the water?
There's a board under the water, which you can look for. If you freeze right now, you'll see that board hiding beneath the surface. It depends how good the transfer is.
On the side shot, on the wide side, you can see the board. And there was this elaborate ramp that we had built at the end of it. And Alan was supposed to go down to the end of the ramp, and
touch
then the
her.
Ramp was
and
going
was
to hydraulically
lift
her up to the level, and then they were both going to walk off.
But once again, because it was too difficult, tricky, and would have added something of substance to the picture, we decided not to do it at the last minute.
But more than that, it was just we had shot it so late. It was a very short period of time, and we just ran out of time, so we had very little money. Mm.
Very little money. This movie, we should
point
out,
job, by the
was
way,
shot
for
$10 million.
Yeah. Well, shot and
$10 million.
$10 million, ladies and gentlemen. That's why when it went on to do 30, it was considered a success.
That's why they took out the ad.
That's why they took out an ad, because it's a movie that did three times its budget.
Well, that is the magic figure for turning a profit.
Yes. I remember people called me up and said, congratulations, you can now sit at the $30 million table. Which I guess I hadn't before. And I said, what are the benefits? And he said, we laugh at everyone who doesn't sit at the $30 table.
Well, you saw
so I was like,
more...
did you guys used to laugh at me? Yes.
You sell a lot more video cassettes.
Yeah, I think that's the point. The point is it sells a lot more video cassettes. I know Columbia TriStar is like jumping around. Going,
salivating at the prospect of releasing this winner on video.
Aside from the train scene, this is probably my second favorite scene. Because his dialogue is
Rickman's
fantastic.
Tremendous. It was Rickman's idea to dye his hair black and wear... very pasty white makeup.
He wanted to be
an aging Ziggy Stardust. Yeah. Stardust was his approach for the character.
Now, didn't this entire, even the next sequence in the restaurant, originally that all took place in the woods, but then...
Yeah, earlier. Yeah. But then Mosher said, change locations.
Well, it also made it a lot more comfortable, I'm sure.
Yeah, thank God we didn't have to do the rest of the scene. That's why he snaps his fingers and we show up in a really nice restaurant at one point.
How is it like 10 million, 100,000 videotapes? What's 30 million? Is it 300,000 or is it more?
I don't know. You should probably ask somebody from
We can ask
video.
Mike Stratford. More? Yell it out, Mike.
400?
300,000 videotapes? Really?
Wow.
All right.
That's nice.
Wow.
It's about time.
That's why they brought the food and shit.
Yeah, they're like, for that, you get Chinese food and pizza.
Yeah, and
if we push a million videotapes, then we bring you turkey. I think we get a ham for that.
A ham? I don't even think anyone's ever sold a
What's
million.
What's the next movie, Kev?
Oh, a million? Mike,
a million rental
yeah,
cassettes.
Mike's not.
No.
He's like, oh, yeah. What, like
no,
Titanic
rental,
and stuff like that?
Oh, easy. A lot of them
like
sold
Titanic.
Rental cassettes.
More than that.
What?
Mighty
no,
Ducks
no,
2
no,
did 100.
About rental.
Talking about rental. Talking about
rental.
Or
rental.
Rental, I don't think anyone's ever sold a million.
Mike, rental, has anyone ever done a million? Mike's like, concentrate on the fucking picture. Remind what you're going to do.
Don't worry about your business, okay? You get better at what you do before you step into my world.
This is a really nice restaurant in Pittsburgh called...
I don't remember what it's called, but it's the old...
It's an old train station.
Train station.
They turned it into a restaurant. This day, we had to do a few takes because Alan... This is when Alan's back really went bad. See what he slides in there? Can't really see the pain on his face, but he was in agony that day. Because his back was still killing from those winds.
It hurt him to sit.
It hurt him to sit, to stand, to move.
For a few seconds.
He's fantastic, nonetheless.
Yeah, he really... He's another guy, though, that, like, you know, shoots his stuff, and he's really brilliant, and then he's just like, I'm probably not good. I'm not very good. Not a very good judge of the sequence or his performance, his own performance. Maddie's the same way. Affleck's the only guy when he's done is just like, print money, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, God, that was great. It doesn't get much better. Let's move on.
Yeah. In other films, I'm like, this picture might work. With Kevin, it's kind of like, well, I mean, you know, it's limited in scope, really, let's face it. I just understand it doesn't really matter that much.
Trying to be excellent, trying to be excellent at Kevin Smith pictures like bringing coals to Newcastle.
If a tree falls in the woods. It could be good, it could be bad.
Hundreds of thousands of non-fans.
70s, 80 people.
Did you close the restaurant when you shot this?
Barely. We had a very small window in which to shoot it.
They
weren't that agreeable, I remember.
We shot it at night, so it was closed.
We
didn't close the restaurant. We went after it.
They were closed. They wouldn't let us shoot during the day.
Omnipotent as we are, though, I have to admit that we're more or less lost without his presence. We've had our people looking everywhere.
What are you guys doing tonight? Anybody doing anything they want to talk about?
My mom's in town, huh?
We're
awesome.
The Simpsons.
Yeah, cool. Tonight's a big night of TV watching for me. Yeah.
Oh, it is a good TV night, actually.
Oh, it's Simpsons.
X-Files?
It's X-Files and then The Practice.
Oh, no, man. Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, are you high?
No.
That show's good, dude.
Stop it.
No, that's it. This is overcut. Malcolm in the Middle. Heavens, what are you talking
this
about?
This is not going to be on the track.
Hey,
yes,
like,
it will.
Like
this
Malcolm.
Will be on the track. Do you like Malcolm in the Middle?
I do like Malcolm.
Oh, God.
I've actually never seen it, but I do do like the X-Files.
Yes, the X-Files. The Practice. You watch The Practice?
I've never seen The Practice.
So King of the Hill?
I'm only recently getting back into
it. King of the Hill is very early, though. It's 7:30 or 7 o'clock. Yeah. 7:30, I think.
That show's funny. I like that show.
No, this is the point where they become prophets, apparently.
The
West Wing
is
a great TV show.
Yeah, I guess we're supposed to. You like The West Wing?
Yeah, that's good. That is good.
Oh, good Lord.
It's a more intelligent highbrow show. It's about politics, thinking man's things, not poop monsters, not fake religious
like
nonsense.
Night?
I've never seen it.
Now I'm wondering if you're angling getting to an Aaron Sorkin picture. You're like, I like West Wing.
The head of the Carlin scene that's starting here, there was actually an animated commercial that we never got to do. We storyboarded, but we never got to do. It was for Hostie's cereal.
You did there were animatics.
We did an animatic, which you may see.
We do have it, yes.
Awesome.
And the scene was about three times as long.
Yeah, it was much
longer. Carlin, which we didn't get to mention at the head of the sequence, is a phenomenal in this movie. Very funny man in his day job, very brilliant man in his day job, but I thought was one of the most consummate professionals I've ever worked with in my life.
He's a really nice guy. I was
really
a huge
nice
fan
guy.
Of his.
Yeah.
He gave me some tapes and signed them as stand-up stuff. He's a legend, and he was real sweet. He doesn't, like a lot of these guys who are
doesn't put on
legends,
air.
Like want you to,
and you can have a conversation with him. It's not like if you're talking to him, he's constantly doing his act.
Yeah.
You just sit
or
there
talking
and talk
about himself.
Or talking about himself.
Now the way that everyone was situated in this room was all placed around that monitor. And I know that you said that you had problems cutting the scene. And when you lost the whole opening.
The monitor on which the commercial was showing.
Yeah,
at the end of the scene originally, Glick turns off the TV after he shows us the Hosties commercial. You can see a box of Hosties in the background behind him.
And you can see the TV and in then, that one wide shot.
And then starts talking to him, then sits down.
We did have
to cut around it.
Him was called I Am.
I like those posters in the background. This poster of the host says Eat Me on it. This poster says Sunday.
It's the kind of thing you should have been paying attention to the movie you were making.
All the art and all the posters and stuff were done by a guy named Scott Purcell.
Scott Purcell, designed Mubi.
This really actually, on a theological, political level, you got a lot. Most of the heat came down around this. Is that it was reductive and oversimplified. A couple of people about the sound of the slave trade. And the Holocaust is, of course, a raging debate about whether or not...
Yeah, but it became a raging debate not in the time that I wrote the script, but in the time we were making the movie.
That's true.
Like, months before we started production, I believe there was a brouhaha about how the church was just like, you know what...
I like the movie, you know what I'm saying?
I know, I just don't want you to...
Well, Scott shot this, didn't he?
I just don't like that word. Scott shot this sequence. He was the director of the sequence, which is why the performances are better than ever. And any other performance these two.
So why all of a sudden it kind of looks like a real movie.
I really like that moment where you guys come up to the Jersey sign and there's that big musical
That's
flourish.
Another shot.
That's also in Highlands, Bootlegger. It still exists.
Would you guys go shoot those establishing exteriors after the movie?
Yeah, that was in March.
People were confused.
The day that Stanley Kubrick
died. What is this?
Yes, the day that Stanley Kubrick died, we shot all of our
insects. Decided to take over his mantle and shoot exteriors in Highlands, New Jersey.
Cross-check, dress, and fuck. That one almost got cut.
Yeah, we were asked to take that out.
And you refused.
Because you're suggesting that his robes were somehow
related to his desire to wear women's clothes. It's a joke. Hey, Lee's back in the picture, ladies and gentlemen.
Some nice sound.
The seersucker returns.
Look at that MGD plug. That is astonishing.
Yeah, and I'm not even a beer drinker.
Oh.
But I guess we got the free sign. Ratface liked it. Hey, and Selma's back in the picture as well.
Teleportation, you don't ever see it happen. It's the old cutaway, cutback trick.
That's right. Just in time to join us for a drink. Actually, if you watch all the flicks we've ever
Matt
done
Mayer.
With Lee, Lee is the most quotable, I think, of all the flicks, because he's got great inflection.
He's got the most personality.
The most personality and the best lines.
This is brilliant. All right, Plato.
Matt Mayer's a friend of yours.
He's a friend of mine. He's a fine
friend of ours
actor.
Picture.
That's
Brian Johnson made a movie called Vulgar that Matt's in, and he was brilliant in it, so we asked him to come in and do a
coincidentally,
sequence.
We all, yeah.
And we knew him, yeah. We didn't know that they were friends with Ben.
Now here's a bit of on-screen violence involving a gun.
All right, Plato.
That was weird.
Was this another real bar that he shot at?
Don't you muse?
Yeah.
Don't you muse? Don't.
That's very Lee. Lee has, again, you watch any movie we've done with Lee, has the most imitatable performance up there.
And
people
out of nowhere, up jump the triplets.
Yeah, the triplets pop out. They're supposed to pop out of the floor, but that would have cost too much money.
I love that. Get it? What is that accent? What a get it? It's the Orange County skater. Get it?
Orange County skater.
I don't know. I never met anyone else who said get it. Like, get bin. He's like, bin? I don't know where that accent is.
I say get instead of get.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
Get it.
It never, you don't hear it. It's like a very subtle accent.
Get it?
Get it?
Get it?
Pawns Moving and Checkmate as we speak is a line I stole from Foul Play.
Hey, it was a
Everyone
good delivery.
Loves this
caused
bit
me
with
to
Jason.
Not get a nomination at the Spirit Awards.
Yeah. Oh.
Didn't you already win one of those?
Huh?
Jason Lee is a Spirit Award winner for his role in Chasing Amy. And you have been looked over by them twice. Not
Other
in Chasing
that.
Amy, well, I mean, at least for my stuff.
No
Chasing Amy nod, no Dogma nod. I thought you would have for sure have gotten a Dogma nod.
Isn't this crowd made up of a lot of your fans from the website?
Yes, if you look closely, and people listening to this are probably fans anyway, you may see yourselves in the scene, because we put out casting call for extras on the website, saying, like, if you were a fan, you wanted to be in the flicks, you just had to come out to Pittsburgh, put yourself up, and we'd put you in
the crowd.
You
also initially misspelled the banner.
Initially, it's always been misspelled still.
Oh, is that
the green banner says, I think Centennial is misspelled. That wasn't me, though. That was Ratface.
See, again,
Ratface is coming up. Yeah, there's Ratface right there, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, our production designer. All right,
good
math.
Isn't the woman?
Let's need a nice colon and go.
That's
for
Orange Ross. County. That's an Orange County
accent. That's actually Philadelphia.
Accent.
Okay, man.
No,
the
woman
who played
the
governor was the extras casting person.
That's a nice shot.
Yeah, I didn't get props for any of this. So you can see her shirt changed, and it's going to be the one that you're going to rip apart.
But the
here comes. This is boss moment. Yeah, look at my steel tits.
Oh, we had an argument about that. I didn't want to do it that loud, and you were like, do it like Gary Oldman in The Professional.
Yeah.
I was like, you
and
sure?
And you did.
That's
you
big.
Delivered. And people love it. And you can see in our credit sequence, you do it.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Over your credits.
This is the big James Bond sequence.
This is the big James Bond sequence where a lot of people sit down, a guy walks around the room and explains the plot. Makes up any holes or loose ends, ties it all up. Mm. It got cut later on, stuff you'll definitely see on this disc, where Azrael, Lee's character, talks about
the
nature of hell and how humans created it. Great, brilliant piece of bravura acting, but unfortunately, movie was too long.
I love that.
I was inspiration. A muse has no place in battle.
So look at the disgust.
And Azrael was sent down to the demon. Also, we cut out of the movie that you were her brother.
Oh, yeah. You're going to say
yeah,
that,
never
though.
Mentioned in the movie. You'll see it in the cut sequence. Yeah. She goes, my brother here was sent down to the demons. Never bought.
So you were an artist.
This is her finest moment,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Isn't there a bit of continuity error where
she's actually very funny. She's really, funny. Really funny.
And you're a schmuck.
She needs to do more comedy.
Isn't there a bit where Muse is asleep and then he's awake? And
yeah, if you look, sometimes Muse is nodding out, and then Muse is awake, and Muse is nodded out again. And that's our fault, editing. So we have to cover some holes. So yeah, some people waste money, go back, reshoot, and make a better movie. We just use all the footage we shot and somehow make it work. Plenary indulgence.
Plenary indulgence.
That's a lead delivery. Plenary.
Can't trans.
That's great. Can't
see, Muse is out. Muse is out. He may be up in the next wide.
After that, it was a simple.
No, he's still out. It's coming up. I remember at one point. How did it feel to be the guy that really ties the whole movie together?
Nice.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet.
I must say.
The guy that saves the bad writing by basically going, okay, this is what happened while you were all asleep. Were the things we didn't show because it would have been too expensive to show.
That was a different line.
Voiceover.
Yeah.
Oh, voiceover, yeah.
Because the Almighty was in the realm of the quick.
This is a pretty big line, too.
Yeah, everyone laughs at this.
I've seen way too many Bond movies to know that you never reveal all the details of your plan, no matter how close you make it.
How did you plan out like the coverage on a sequence like this?
So disappointed.
Did you sit down with Yeoman and discuss it?
It took a long time,
but yeah. It wasn't like pre-planned. We kind of got there and got figured there, it out. Actually, I remember in rehearsals,
so
we blocked the hell out of
it. It was
this.
A whole routine.
Yeah,
do the gun
routine.
Here, lift it here, walk here, and then say this.
Look, asshole. I don't know if anyone explained the rules to you.
I'll say it again. Look at that acting. Look at that fine piece of acting. Any comments?
I'll say it again. It's Commedia dell'arte pantomime. You brought your mask and the Commedia truck with you.
Right there, that's where we took out the whole Lee speech, which you can see in the cut footage, how great it was. Just ran long. People felt it slowed the picture down.
Why did you feel the need to use all this profanity in your film?
What, all the bad language?
The bad language, the swear words.
I don't know. Just
that's
how
people
talk. That's how most people I know talk. You curse like a sailor, so I don't know what you're talking about. I know you put on a prim and proper face for the Entertainment Tonight camera and the parents and the children who see your pictures. But you, my friend, are a Bulgarian.
And there we have Brian Halloran again.
I'm a Bulgarian, but I'm also your father. I'm asking you to show me some respect.
Brian Halloran back in the picture, ladies and gentlemen. An actor I wish I'd backed more as opposed to Bender Affleck, but
Bender.
Perhaps I'll rethink it.
I'll be back to do the next commentary. You can be assured.
Can I point out that we haven't pointed out the fine lads who play the Stygian triplets?
Oh yeah.
Who were those youngsters?
They were three Pittsburghians, and they could all skate.
And that's how they got the role.
But also the lead one, whose name is
Barrett Hackney.
Barrett
was very menacing looking. We liked him an awful lot.
That's why you gave him all the close-ups?
That's why we gave him all the loving close-ups.
And the eyeliner, I noticed.
Very funny bit with Salma right here.
He liked to put eyeliner on the little boys.
He picked up on that. Look at that deflate. She deflates really nicely. Very cartoony.
There's a line.
Panic.
There's a line from Mallrats.
After you do a movie, you find out the director's paying attention to all this little shit that has nothing to do with it. And he's like, look at this moment. I like this little smile.
You just missed
one side red.
He's going one side red, which is what he did in Mallrats.
And they're both 80-yard lines.
See? Case in point.
Both 80-yard lines. You're right.
And here's another bit of subtle digital coming up.
And a bit of none too subtle acting right there.
From who?
From me.
Oh. The Reynolds chest comes into play here.
This came in later on. We asked them to put in a little flame and smoke.
Wasn't it because...
Look at the hair on the chest.
Yeah.
Some people pointed out to him, the movie came out, if he's from hell, how come he's got a belly button? If he was never born, why would he have a belly button?
Because
that's when I realized we could have made $100 million if we'd taken off your belly button.
And that's the only reason, huh? Here's probably the goriest shot in the film.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Look at that, the might.
Just slam.
The might of
boom.
Bob. Jay's trying
wall.
To just fuck that kid in the background. This is the molestation scene.
Fuck him up. See me throw him against the wall and shit.
Those hands are not the hands of our actors. They're stunt hands. Stunt people holding on to the stunt people under the water.
You can see the little line of that chess piece there.
We can see that Muse's actions aren't quite matching.
No, they don't. It's hard to replicate Muse. Next to impossible. You try to do it all the time, you never succeed.
Never.
Here comes Lee's departure from the movie. Ladies and gentlemen, Jason Lee has left the building. Chasing Amy's Jason Lee.
Bye, Jason.
The dead demon Azrael.
Is that the first time you've died on film, Jason?
Huh?
Is it the first time you've died on film?
We die. We all died in Mallrats.
Yeah, right. Oh, no. He died enemy of the state. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's right. He got hit by a damn truck on a bike.
Visual film, enemy of the state.
Holy shit. Suck a duck.
It's fuck a duck, Kevin.
Fuck a duck, sorry. Lee's immortal performance from enemy of the state.
Look at Salma Bob, so obsessed with that black blood.
With the gook.
People always think of Jerry Bruckheimer as the big movie, but he went and culled all the Chasing Amy folks.
He did, if you look very closely.
Did you hear that line right there?
Whole fucking world's against us, dude.
You can
get
that on the back of a shirt at Jay and Silent Bob's right back in New Jersey.
That's right. Yeah, it's about on the back of a Jay and Silent Bob t-shirt.
This is a really nice screenshot.
You get a piece of that merchandising, Muse?
This is a nice shot, and... we cut it kind of short.
Not really. He cut a little bit off the end.
It's a nice shot, I guess. I mean, see, you hear Muse's line there. I liked it better when we actually saw him when he delivered that line.
But he was always
people
kind of in the
wonder
background.
Why I never go to church anymore. I think already the movie is suffering from the absence of Jason Lee.
Yes.
Don't worry, old ham-fisted Hammy Ham over here.
Arrived to save the proceedings.
And get big. Let's go give us see some. Going back to your point, Jerry Bruckheimer did use both you and Lee in pictures.
And he hired you to do something.
And he hired me to write for Coyote Ugly, a movie he did.
It's kind of gross.
I guess he liked chasing him.
Look at this. What do you think, Shaggy? I don't know, Scoop.
Friend of yours, that one has been used, that was a couple times in the film.
Mm-hmm, friend of yours.
The gang used it as well when the Golgothan showed up.
Now, his wings have been cut off already. Mm.
That's entirely digital.
Yeah, all
that.
Digital, except for the sky. That was real.
The sky was
move over, there. Matrix. I can understand why we were nominated for it. Look at these visual effects. They're amazing. They are good-looking visual effects. They actually are good. Especially if you consider the fact that the movie was so cheap. That scream. Whose scream? Mine? you wish.
I think it was George Lucas.
Yeah, it's Skywalker. They took a scream that Lucas had done for Star Wars, and it was from their library, and we used it in the movie. So George
either
Lucas.
Either that or it's the Wilhelm, which is a famous scream
that they used, that George Lucas used. Anyway, George Lucas does condone and appreciate this movie for all it's worth. And,
you know, now you try to bring him into the like coterie of people who are under the threat of death.
I don't think George Lucas saw this picture. This guy's fucking chugger in hell.
Which means it's human now.
Are they going to interview Bill Donahue for this? Be nice. I think he
was supposed to come here today, but
yeah, he was going to be the 1, 2, 3, 4, 7th man.
Yeah,
but pussy.
You know, they keep, everyone keeps mentioning me, the Muse.
Yeah, they do. Well, at one point, the picture was called Dog Muse. Yeah. We opted to change it. Although, after the test screenings, we decided it should have been called Dog Muse.
Yeah.
Because the picture was pretty much all
comes
about you and
chicken.
People loved you. People were like more Muse.
It was originally called Dog Mall.
Superman leg here.
Dog Mall Rats. You like that? Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it. You have class.
Superman leg. He like tucks it up with his knee.
With the leg?
Yeah.
Isn't that shot gone?
A bit of a bit of limb business there.
Well, remember, I wish I could come down a little
faster. I mean, it was tough to look like tough and vengeful.
Shot where he's coming down. How did that happen?
Well, he was lowered on a rope. Hold on, wait for the bitch slap. Hold on.
And
I don't say bitch slap because she's a bitch, because she's really nice. It's a bitch slap because traditionally it's defined as a bitch slap. We lowered him on ropes, which in the first test screening, you know, we were in the
that
race,
was death.
And they were there.
Funny.
And the shot came up, and people started laughing.
People just started guffawing and laughing.
Didn't move. They were the still pair. Mm. And the voice you heard laughing loudest was Muse. I think Muse filled out a card and said his favorite part was the ropes.
That looked cool, though, man, when the wings folded up at the bottom, when he was he tucked them away.
I thought the wings looked really badass.
Now, that's the same knife he was fingering in the when they were in the gun shop.
And you can't say fingering a family disc. Yeah, it was the same one. It comes back into play later on. How come you're not cutting your fingers on it now there?
Well, he needed that little business so that, you know, the more attentive members of the audience would notice that.
I think you're a badass thing in the scene, actually. I wish this picture hadn't been about religion, because it probably would have made a lot more money. Shatner, soon a Gusher police will arrive.
This is the undeliverable line, where I was like, apparently, I haven't seen enough Bond movies not to know better.
No, I can't let you do that, Bartleby. This is gone.
Now, how did his wings get cut off?
Presumably, Bartleby cut them off for him.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah, he busted a little move.
I'll do it.
This is a really nice moment. I always thought we would use this, just the single two-shot all the way through, but we actually wound up using the coverage because it was so nice.
I want to... He goes, we're going to fuck this play school kicker.
You do, that's right. Yeah. The head-to-head move from Mallrats, stolen from Jason Lee and Jason...
My entire acting repertoire is lifted from different moments in Mallrats.
And it's panned out for you quite well.
In the test screenings, there are certain cards that all the person managed to say was, why Ben kill Matt?
I think you filled out one of those cards yourself.
Let him live.
He's a good guy.
Wings,
you're about to kill us, but... Oh, no! Wait for the guy to pull the wing strings.
That's always the line I used to always say to the guys used to say to me was the wing guys from...
You're like a meat trying to get some booty.
Ed Wood. Martin Lando says, pull the strings, because there are all these ropes and strings attached to the wings.
This is a huge moment for Muse.
Yeah, this was a big moment in theaters. People loved when Muse said that he was finally going to get
laid.
You
should do the new Die Hard, Muse.
Mm. Actually, he shot the whole behind the booth stuff inside.
In a building behind the hospital, because there was a tornado coming?
Yes.
We shot it indoors. All this stuff you're seeing right here was inside. Yeoman did a really nice job making it look like it was actually outside.
There's a shot here that was picked up in Red Bank, New Jersey, of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
The insert.
Of her getting hit by the lightning?
Make it with the love.
Which one? The one of the hospital?
Oh, the hospital sequence. That's right, coming up. That, I should point out, is not Ben Affleck hurling people around because he's quite weak. It's really his stunt double.
There's that shot.
That's the real me bitch slapping you, though, I think, later on. I'll give you a nice, hearty
pimp
slap.
I don't have time to win your prize.
Call a fake movie punch a bitch slap, sure.
The only kind I know.
Do they have skee ball there? Yeah.
This sequence was actually broken up over a lot of the shooting, wasn't it?
Listen closely, hear Muse say.
He goes, I want to fuck. Get out of here. I like that bit myself.
There's a wonderful piece of pants in my chair. Come on, how am I supposed
to do that? Didn't you, while you were behind the things with Lindo during one of the takes, you actually do it with your pants down? You took all your pants down and your underwear and your piece was hanging out.
Oh, balls running out the back.
Back.
Bit never worked until you put that. This is the apocalypse.
Look right here. Watch this.
Yeah, it really didn't.
Watch my motivation.
That's sweet. Motivation. My favorite shots in the flick is when you turn around with those wings. It's a real Batman type shot. Unfortunately, the picture didn't rise to the
right
level of the rest.
My motivation.
This is the best part of the movie right here.
And Phantoms.
What is it?
My motivation was Ben Affleck and Phantoms.
I can see that. You can tell, watch, because look at the look of determination. Ready, here comes your head. God damn it, playing right into my criminal hands, my evil winged mastermind hands. I need my wings cut off. This simple fool is going to do it, so I give a little head nod.
I didn't regret doing this movie until this day.
Scott, did you shoot that? The wings getting blown off?
We shot the... blowing up.
The guy
later on.
That fucking machine.
He loves shooting that gun. Long lenses and it's close and cinematic.
It's very.
Things are blowing up. So we wanted to be near
the blowing up of the wings. That's right.
Some of those slow motion bullet hits are reminiscent of Peckinpah or John Woo, perhaps.
That's about as close as I'll ever get.
Really well here. I really enjoyed this performance.
That blood coming out gets...
You liked shooting that gun, did you?
Yeah, man.
It's great. There's another line of work for you out there.
Yeah.
Die Hard, I'm telling you.
No, just robbing liquor stores. He's really good with a piece.
Remember, I got to go shoot guns with the police officer at the shooting range.
Ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't get much bigger than this, does it?
Operatic.
They cut out the J laugh on the bar that took a half hour to shoot.
Now, this whole sequence was substantially reworked in the editing as well.
Praise the Lord.
Originally, thank God. Originally, the Golgothan shit monster came back, and the first test screening we learned that was a really bad idea.
The only problem is that you don't quite know what happened to Bob.
Yeah, Bob kind of disappears in the hospital. I always figure he wants to take a leak.
But the intercut in here is really good.
You know, you're in the middle of all this high drama. I don't think anyone's wondering what happened to Schuller book.
Nobody cares.
Look at that.
You had to visually add that. And
you don't see that on the X-Files every week.
But those two shots of Linda dying were shot...
were shot in Red Bank, New Jersey, home of James Bob's secret stage. Yeah. I like this. Me and Mojer put this sequence together, and we were very proud of ourselves.
The guy in the hospital bed was
Bud Cort. Never pointed out. Bud Cort, the immortal Bud Cort.
Harold.
The legend who was in Harold and Maude, amongst other things.
Well, here, of course, is the Fair Alanis Morissette, roundly criticized as in the pre-release buzz as like, and they cast Alanis Morissette as God, but actually I thought it acquitted herself quite nicely.
Yeah, and actually critics picked up on that and said she was really good. And this moment probably being key amongst those moments that made them think she was good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she has to carry the weight of emotional moment here, which Crybaby on the screen can't really do himself.
This just turned into the juvenile, it's the crack fest. Start popping on each other.
That should have been an Oscar, bro.
You're like,
I really
that crying with Ben Oscar. Saying, I'm sorry, it's what he pretty much says to me after every take. I'm sorry. Because he's butchering my material. I could be a lot bigger were it not for Ben Affleck.
Sure.
No.
This is a great moment. You were really fine in this. And this is your swan song in the picture, so we should show you a little respect.
Mercifully allowed to get out of this... lame duck of a movie thing.
Counting the minutes until
let me go.
Until he gets to shoot a
Sandy
Bullock picture.
Thank you, I'm done.
This was optically processed to give it that shake.
That was Mosier's call. Mosier said, let's shake it up.
Yeah.
A la Rick Ocasek in the Cars. And now, I said, I'm with you, buddy.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people wonder whether Bartleby went to heaven or hell.
And I don't have an answer for that. Yeah, I think it's up to the individual viewer, depending on what your view of the
It doesn't matter where he went. He just doesn't have to be in this movie anymore.
A lot of people thought that your head blowing up was a kind of a... something that I forget.
Ego? Like an ego?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Nice cover. The last for words, Muse will step in and take care of you.
As always.
She's a Muse, largely.
Muse is my
film.
Muse.
Wasn't this dress like worth $70,000?
Yeah, it's probably the simplest, worst visual effect ever. Us pulling her one dress off to reveal the other. It's supposed to be magical, but if you look real closely, she's wearing two pairs of clothes in the shot we do the transition on. Great moment right here. People love this.
Why the fuck did you hug my hand?
And 10 takes to get to this. On the 10th take, the line of direction that drove it to the excellence that it is for Jason was do it like Daffy Duck, and here it comes. You'll see it. Companion's eyes.
What the fuck does that mean? Has everyone gone fucking nuts? What the fuck happened?
That's the one.
If that ain't Warner Brothers cartoony acting, I don't know what is. That was a great piece, and people love that in the movie, in the theater. This was pretty much Muse's picture from beginning to end.
Yeah.
I got a boner for real there.
That's why it was Muse's picture.
Yeah.
Alanis did really, really nicely. Did she not?
She did. She sure did.
And she also donated a song to the end of the picture.
Oh, yeah. No,
which was not nominated for an Academy Award. As I should point out, nothing in this film was nominated for any Academy Awards.
This is my favorite shot in the film, just this steady cam up on her.
You like this, did you?
I like this a lot.
You look at the one strand of hair blowing around that always bugged me.
I think it's kind of...
I said, can we digitally remove that? And they said it'll cost $800,000.
No.
Is it done?
Yeah.
Do it.
You wrote a check out of pocket, didn't you, for that? I did. I said, get rid of that hair, and they still didn't do
it. So this is another one of those sort of thematic...
This was changed, actually, because at the end of the movie in the script, it called for everything, the blood and the mayhem, to be left in place when the movie ended. But there was a scheduling conflict. We were losing people. Salma had to go shoot a Revlon thing, and Alanis had to go off for a little while, and we had to shift things around and decided that we'd come back and clean up the church and do it that way, because it would be another month before we finished the end of the sequence following the God cleanup.
We had left all the blood and the destruction in front of this
Ken,
guy's church.
Whose church it is. Pastor Ken, who's a really interesting guy, who actually is one of the guys who carbon dated the Shroud of Turin in real life.
Wow.
Yeah. He owns this church. It was a Catholic church that the Catholics kind of got out of the neighborhood. They didn't want to be there anymore, and they sold him the church for pretty much a song, and he opened up his own faith fellowship there. Really nice guy. But he let us leave all this blood and hanging limbs and
fake bodies and
stuff.
He actually
all around
held
the place.
Services.
Yeah, built around. He built sermons around the stuff outside. What is dogma? Why is there blood in the street? Why is that arm in the hand?
For letting us leave that stuff there.
He did. He's a tremendous individual.
What happened to her line?
Alanis' line?
Yeah.
Just cut it out.
You didn't like it anymore?
First things to go.
No.
So a lot of people thought it was like too inside and also too jokey. And me and Moshe were sitting there thinking,
yeah,
well, maybe
it's
better if you
just... joke, it should be funny, usually.
That was the problem. The problem was it wasn't nearly as strong as... as any of Chucky's material in Goodwill Hunting. So
there you go.
We decided to go another way. Here's another one of our cutaway, and it's magically transformed.
Well, you were
going
to do an
effect
there.
It's about three or four in the movie.
But you didn't want to chance getting any fake blood on that incredibly expensive dress.
The jacket, from what I understand, not even the dress. The dress was cheap. Alanis' jacket was about $40,000, $60,000.
What?
Christian Lacroix jacket. Yeah, it was one of a kind. That little ensemble she's wearing, so she couldn't get any blood on it.
Now, this is another thematic question, but now that everything's cleaned up, are all those people still dead? Are they back where they were that morning?
That's another thing that I leave
you
in the hands of the viewer.
The audience.
The only question I'll answer is, are those flowers fake? Yes.
That's a great thing. Every movie I want to do now, I'd be like, this doesn't make sense. There's all these holes in the plot. I'd be like, I leave that to the mind of the viewer. You decide.
It's an easy scapegoat.
Does it make sense?
Maybe not. I should point out, was her idea. The idea to put the boxer shorts on her was mine, though, because otherwise she'd be doing a handstand, her panties be there. I don't know, you were all for that as a classless man, but I respected the individual's right to privacy. But I said, do something when you're over by the flowers, sniff the flowers, maybe hang from the tree. She said, can I do a headstand? I said, I don't know, can you? And she could, and we did. A lot of people liked it.
It's wonderful to go back and visit the little dialogue exchanges you had with the cast. You always come off as particularly witty and quippy in them.
Yeah, well, I'm quick like that.
Oh, step.
I heard you rehearsing that outside before you came back.
During the break. I was like, all right, turn this scene, I'll say. So I seemed funny.
For that $40,000 jacket.
Oh, this is another...
People seem to like this. You'll see the blood on my hands is from the sequence that was cut. It wasn't so much from carrying the bloody Bethany, it was from fighting these last Stygian triplet who also popped up at the hospital.
And we cut that sequence as well.
Bless you.
Why are we here? It's a question we should probably be asking ourselves right now. Why are we bothering doing a commentary for this movie?
Could you have done it for every other one?
It's true, because it's here. And because someone
else. At least
this
movie's good, and I don't know why we did the Mallrats one.
Because it wasn't. That was the idea, to sit around and go, why did we make this? Mallrats was a fine film. People, if you haven't seen it, please check it out. I know it's on another label, and we shouldn't be pushing it, but watch it. Great DVD, great commentary. Oh, yeah. Almost the same amount, same people, I think, were involved in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Big moment. That's the best. People like the lesbian thing.
Jason, in my opinion, saves this whole ending. He's like, otherwise, it could have become too, like, ponderous and saccharine. But every time
ponderous and saccharine, coming from the guy who made the overly sentimental Goodwill Hunting.
Exactly. What we should have done is we should have put in vagina licking pantomime.
One day I'm going to show up at your house and you're not going to be there.
And I'm going to chew box. See, that would have been great.
That's an important moment for Bethany, where she says she has a good idea.
Yes, it pretty much brings the whole movie back to its point.
Her whole...
Not to be too mired in anything
yeah.
that you can't see beyond your own myopic point. I just made that up right now.
It's deep.
Rufus. I think Linda actually ad-libbed that Rufus.
You let it stay in there?
I did. It was tough to cut around. Yeah. What was you like that moment where Muse cocks his head? Tell him what you thought.
I just love that he doesn't really, at that moment, he looks like he doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah, well, just like after everything he's seen, that's the only thing that gives him pause. Like, hey, everyone's going.
Yo, we should make a quick stop. Yeah, she came close to cutting that one.
Yeah, we did.
We cut it for one of the test screens.
One of the test screens, it wasn't in there.
Is that supposed to be a harbinger of Clerks 2? Is that the next
Kevin? No, because I don't know if we're going to do Clerks 2 next. I don't know what's next, to tell you the God's honest truth. I think there's one more Jay and Bob type movie, and then it's on to Greener Pastures. A lot of people, there were internet rumors that Jay got killed in this movie. Which, really? Yeah, while we were cutting, and I was sitting there going, wow, that would have been really cool. Because then it would have been, you know, Silent Bob, everything. Just Silent Bob.
Just a silent picture.
And then we go to this this sort of curtain call credits.
Yeah, Moshe's idea. Really fanned out nicely.
Yeah. We wanted to give at least the cast some credit.
And basically we use takes where people break character. See, there's Affleck doing
that. So let everyone know that it's not real.
Yeah, just so you don't think that the movie's real.
And it just makes it look like we had a shitload of fun.
Yeah, which we didn't. It was hell making this picture. Yeah. I don't know about you people, but I was counting the minutes till it was over.
This is the best one. Yeah. That's my favorite right there. That is, I want to keep that on a loop at my house.
Some weren't so much outtakes or character breaks.
Yeah.
Some people just refused to laugh. They had
some people were just really good and never broke character. Other people, like Affleck, constantly lost it.
It was like looking through 10 hours of footage.
How does one pretend this is real? This is exercise of foolishness.
And here comes the Alanis song.
Yeah, the Alanis song kicks off. I like the way we did the credits. Everything was.
You almost got into a bit of trouble with the Writers Guild.
The producer was... The co-producer was. That's class. And still, we didn't get nominated for any awards.
I know.
No awards.
But, now, Kev, you almost got into a bit of trouble with the Writers Guild.
We did. The Writers Guild wanted us to put my credit.
Written by and directed by, right?
No, they didn't. They didn't want. Like, I wanted to put all the actors and then put, you know, the crew credits. And they wanted me to put the writer credit before the actors, and I said, that's ridiculous. I mean, it's not set up that way. And Mosier's point was like, look, I could see if you were looking out for the rights of the writer, if it was somebody who wasn't the director. But the director made this movie, he's also the writer, he can put the credit wherever he wants. And so they were trying to force us by way of a huge fine into making me put my credit before the
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Well, the rules are in place.
Were you going to break up the writer and director credits?
Yeah. Well, they wanted the writer credit before the cast.
They didn't mind it being combined with director credit.
That was the Writers Guild West. The Writers Guild East, though, came in, saved the day, and said, let the boy do whatever he wants. Because the West Coast is foolish, and the East Coast rules. Jersey represent.
Yeah, yeah.
You actually used a lot of your crew members from Mallrats on this. Not just Carol, but also Laura Greenlee.
Yes.
But you didn't use your boyfriend. Who was that dude who got pissed? Mallrats, remember the guy?
Ed.
Ed wasn't around. Ed quit halfway through Mallrats. He was like, Kev's fucked up making me hang lights. I directed Clerks. Fuck this.
He was a little upset by the whole affair.
I didn't know anybody. I was like, this guy's kind of crazy.
He was trying to recruit you to his calls and whatnot. Did Ed see Dogma? Jay?
I thought.
Yeah.
He like it, or do you think it was just more bullshit that he wasn't involved in?
He liked it.
Good.
Oh, there's me.
Because I pretty much make a movie for
Ed.
Yeah. Hey, there's my
Vincent
credit.
Vincent Pereira.
Vincent.
Day Play Electrics. Look for that puppeteer credit. I'm really proud of
you. You have a puppeteer credit? Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wouldn't lie to you, Vincent. And as the Viewaskew historian, I'm shocked and appalled that you didn't know that.
Well, I wasn't on set.
Yeah,
well,
you
got to
look at the credits. You got to study these credits.
I will study them.
You could call up useless facts in a moment's notice. Like, for example, who was the special effects assistant? You got to be able to say Melissa Frick.
Okay, sure.
Joe and Louie, those are good guys, the effects guys.
Yeah, the effects guys were great. And Charlie, we should point out, was
Charlie who did the special effects.
He did the special effects, and everything blew up.
Right.
So the people who made the wings and whatnot.
Yeah.
To all the girls.
There he is,
Kevin P.
Smith.
Oh, wow.
I took a different credit.
That's Kevin Puppeteers.
You'll notice that I wasn't Kevin Puppeteers. I wasn't one of those faces at the end in the credits. I didn't take one of those look at me.
Oh, yeah, but yeah.
Never do. You'll never see written and directed by or film by credit at the head of it, at the picture. You know, some cats
do that. Why don't you take a film by credit? They usually take a film by
if it's written and directed by. No, because no one man makes a movie. It's not a film by Kevin Smith. It's a film by Kevin Smith and a bunch of other people. Kevin Smith brings his vision to life. I know you can't see past that because you're an egomaniac, but... That's the way I like to do business. I try to keep it real and honest.
Very egomaniacal. And yet, notice that. I mean, with the exception of these two gentlemen on my right, I'm the only other cast member showed back up. So you better keep what few friends you have left amongst the SAG community.
Oh, Derek, Bartleby Stanton, was the kissing guy at the beginning as well.
That's right.
He's your buddy Derek. And how come Vinny had to point him out? Don't you give props to your friends like
me? Well, I'm egomaniacal. I like to sort of concentrate the attention on me if I can.
Scott Mosier, second unit director.
I thought you were the second unit director on this
That's
picture.
So too.
I'm on set. If you don't see Affleck in front of the camera, you can usually see him behind the camera, ever looking down.